Ben? Where the hell?
I'll open the meeting and then you can run in. But yeah, okay. Can they change it on the screen? Yeah, let me. I'm going to open this meeting shortly, and I just want to explain how it works. those of you who are in Santiago probably know, those of you who are not may not. This is the board meeting, and it is for the board. It's not an open interactive meeting. It's an open meeting that you can watch. So you're invited to watch and to pay attention. We're going to be putting the documents up on the screen, but we don't have handouts. And we're going to try, obviously, to be clear, but our purpose here is to talk among ourselves and to come to the decisions about which we got your input yesterday online and in many other places. So that's how this works. There's also, I'd just like to call your attention, there's a list of items that were lost and found that's posted on one, is the lost and found thing up? Some things were lost and some things were found, including one thing that was lost was a computer that was up here. We suspect it wasn't lost. We're now going to get started. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here again. And I'd like to formally open the meeting and then turn it over to Mike. As most of you know, I'm going to leave at 11, not in disgust or protest, but because I have to catch a flight. So I hope we can deal with all the interesting stuff before that. Mike?
Thank you, Esther. The general way we're going to proceed this morning is to have me introduce and recognize discussion on these items, and Andrew will, and Lee, as the case may be, will read to the directors the proposed action to be taken at the meeting following the discussion. The first item up this morning is the board's resolution with respect to arrangements with CCTLDs. Andrew, would you like to proceed?
So what I'm about to do is read a resolution that is based on my sense of where the board was yesterday, and then we'll just throw it up into discussion from the board. So this is a draft resolution on CCTLD administration and delegation policies. Whereas the board directed the president and staff to prepare appropriate contractual relationships with CCTLD registries in connection with the funding arrangements presented in the final report of the Task Force on Funding in Resolution 99-136. Whereas the board has received a number of serious and carefully crafted recommendations relating to CCTLD administration and delegation policies, best practices, and contractual elements, including recommendations from the Governmental Advisory Committee, CCTLD managers, and others. Whereas the elements of these recommendations provide a sound basis for constructive dialogue and the finalization of stable and appropriate relationships. Resolved that the President and staff are authorized to work with the CCTLD managers, Governmental Advisory Committee, and other interested parties to prepare draft language for contracts, policy statements, and/or communications, including appropriate funding arrangements, to be presented to the board and posted for public comment as soon as practicable.
Is there a comment, Ben?
Just one, to make sure that this means that we could potentially take action on this matter before the next board meeting, the face-to-face board meeting, is that correct?
It would be excellent.
I believe that as we get around the meeting arrangements this morning, we'll probably calendar telephone meetings for April and May and June.
Very good. My concern is that this not drifts off into
to move things along. Thank you. Hans, you had your hand up. Ken.
Nope. And there's money here, but there's also specific arrangements with CCTLDs, and I assume we'll get a look at it. Understand the dynamics of those relationships.
And just to put a gloss on the text along those lines, Esther. I mean, what my sense of the input we had yesterday, and based on a lot of discussions this week, was that the CCTLD managers are, and the GAC, frankly, are anxious to have the ICANN staff play a somewhat more active role and just get going. And so this resolution provides maximum flexibility to the staff to do that, while setting an expectation that it's going to be done as soon as it can be done. And it also doesn't specify what sort of a document we're going to come out with, you know, contracts, policy documents, and or communications. So we're not clear right now where we're going to go, and this authorizes the staff to work on all three of those angles.
Okay.
Amanera?
Yeah, I just wanted to make clear that what this recommendation says that staff is authorized to start negotiation with CCPLDs and consultation with GAC regarding these documents, but this does not interfere in any way with the efforts of the CCPLDs and the GAC to come to Yokohama with a common document on best practices and general policy. This is not to solve all the problems regarding CCPLD, the place of government, the place of CCPLDs, and the place of ICANN in this game. It's just for the direct relationship between ICANN and the CCPLDs, correct?
It's more flexible than that. We can recommend to the board, the thing to keep in mind here is that there are contracts that we need. We're also talking at the same time about revisions to ICP-1, which is the update of RFC 1591. So there are policy documents that we have on our site, there are actual contract documents, and as you know, the GAC has proposed that there be communications. Now, whether the board will ultimately decide to do communications or policy documents is unclear. It's clear that we need contracts, and we've been working on what the proper division of items between contracts and policy documents like ICP-1, formerly RFC 1591, and communications. So this is basically just says to the staff, go out and do your best to try to get the parties together so that we can, you know, present something to the board as a, I hope, as a package, because I think it's going to have to be done as a package as soon as it's practicable. So it is a little bit more, I mean, it's a little bit more than that. I can't be more specific, because the truth is we don't know whether the governments and the CCTLDs are going to manage to work something. We frankly don't know if the CCTLD managers are going to be able to reach accord among themselves in any kind of short time frame.
Let me supplement that a little bit. Amadeo, to the extent you were asking about, is there anything in here that precludes the governments and the CCTLD managers from working together? The answer is, of course, not. And everything in here, we are supposed to be working with those parties to move this toward an early conclusion that's satisfactory.
I don't know whether this is part of the resolution. I mean, it's definitely not part of the resolution, but I assume there's a sense on the board that we support the notion that there are different kinds of CCTLDs and we like the diversity, and we expect to see that showing up in the contract.
Right.
Okay.
Is there further discussion on the resolution? You have a motion? Jim? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstaining? The resolution passes unanimously. The second agenda item to be taken up this morning is a discussion and action on the possible creation of new top-level domains. Quite a bit of the commentary we had yesterday dealt with the fact that there probably, as Louis just, and Esther pointed out, there's increasing proposals for diversity in what we've been calling the GTLDs. GTLD is now becoming a category that itself is going to be differentiated. So we have, again, some draft language for you to consider, Andrew.
I'll read a resolution that I prepared based, again, on my sense of, based on yesterday as to where things stood. And can you display that resolution, please? It's the first one in my document. It's a new generic top-level domains. All right. Whereas on April 30th, 1999, the World Intellectual Property Organization submitted a report to the ICANN board containing recommendations regarding the protection of globally famous trademarks and the introduction of new generic top-level domains. Whereas in Resolution 99-48, the board referred those recommendations to the domain name supporting organization for its recommendations on these topics to be submitted to the ICANN board at the earliest practicable time after the board's August 1999 meeting in Santiago, Chile. Whereas the Names Council of the DNSO created working groups B and C to study and report on these topics in July 1999. Whereas those working groups have discussed these topics for over 8 months. Whereas on March 10th, 2000, the Names Council requested that reports from the working groups be submitted to it for comment within 10 days and declared its intention to submit the reports for public comment for a period of 4 weeks, after which the Names Council will promptly review and make recommendations on the reports. Resolved that the Names Council is requested to submit recommendations on the topics of protection of globally famous trademarks and the introduction of new generic top-level domains no later than April 20th, 2000. Resolved that the staff is authorized and instructed to prepare, taking into account any working group reports and Names Council recommendations received, and based on consultations with the Names Council, draft policies, draft implementation documents, commentary, and statements of issues on these documents, to be posted for public comment on the ICANN website in advance of the board's meeting in Yokohama on July 15th and 16th, 2000, and resolved, the board notes its intention to act on these topics at the Yokohama meeting.
It's a discussion on this resolution. Esther, I think you had your hand.
2 points. One is a sort of procedural one. I believe this is the kind of thing that needs to be formally, not with ribbons, but just noted that it should be submitted to the other SOs when it comes out of the Men's Council. The second is just to flesh out what the staff is going to be doing. It's going to be providing, I believe, scenarios, sample criteria. I mean, what we need is some concrete models to see what it is we're thinking of doing. And so, you know, let's have five or six straw policies that we can either say make sense or don't make sense. Some notion of how many different kinds of policies there might be. At least from my point of view, I'd like to make sure that there's a diversity of rules for the various kinds of GTLDs. Some may be completely open, some may have various rules and owners.
Excuse me, Hans?
My remark is on the first resolved to avoid any confusion about the mission of ICANN. I would propose to modify the sentence in the way that the council is requested to submit recommendations on the introduction of new generic top-level domains, taking into account protection of globally famous trademarks. Because we do not want a recommendation on the protection of famous trademarks, we want it on generic top-level, generic top-level domains, taking into account the issue of famous trademarks.
Let's see, is there, that seems like a sound adjustment in the language. Is there any disagreement with that change?
It's not fine.
Okay, so in the, I'm also now down to Jonathan Cohen at his end.
As a corollary to Hans's remarks, I am informed from the discussion with WIPO that upon a request from this board, it will immediately undertake the creation of a list of internationally famous trademarks and could be up and running within 30 days to receive requests and would be able to produce that request probably by the time that any action could be taken on the introduction of new GTLDs, assuming that this board decides to move forward with it in July. And I would therefore suggest that we as a board request this. This was anticipated in the original study by WIPO on the whole issue, and in fact they made that offer at this time. I think privately we're going to ask some of the major governments of the world to send in a request, but apparently a request from this board in the circumstances would be sufficient for them to do it, and they're more than willing and ready to do it. So again, I propose that we make a formal request of the WIPO to do it.
So that I understand, you're suggesting that we have an additional resolution clause asking that ICANN itself request the WIPO to generate such a list?
Yes, because WIPO cannot undertake work on its own recognizance. It needs a request from a proper body, and ICANN is such a body.
Oh, ICANN is? Or
ICANN is a member state.
Doesn't it have to be a member state?
No. Apparently, I'm advised that in addition to accepting a request from the United States or Canada or whatever, it will accept a request in these circumstances from the board because it was anticipated in the originally authorized study ordered by this board at the request of the United States government.
Okay, I think Almadale had his hand up.
two things. Perhaps on these first measures, I would prefer having the final report what would be before taking any formal action on any request, even if I know the time is of the essence. Regarding the resolution we have on the table and the second result, I have the problem that I cannot see the text on the screens, but I will talk just out of my memory. The staff instructed to develop policy documents in consultation with the Names Council, something like that. I would only like stressing that it's not only the documents preparation that should be in consultation with the Names Council, but also the procedure to move ahead. We all know, and I myself being a participant of the DNSO, that the DNSO has not exactly performed its job in this area. But I would strongly recommend the board and the staff to consider the possible recommendation to the Names Council to establish very concrete and with very well-defined questions, working groups, with urgent timetables and with clear deadlines, because as Jonathan and Noah know from the past, this works as well. So not only the positive comments, but still also consult the procedures for moving ahead with the Names Council, who, by the way, is the body in charge of the management of the DNS policy.
Esther, and then Pindar, and then Ken, and then Hans.
Yeah, just one of the other things we're going to need specific scenarios about is how this list is going to be used, because it's not simply going to be a blanket exemption. There may be a great number of specific ways in which it can and cannot apply.
I actually want to go back to Jonathan and have his comments on Amadeus' suggestion that we send this issue to Working Group B. Jonathan, do you have any comments on that?
Well, I think addressing both Esther's comments and yours, one, I don't think the issue is not what will be done with the list at this point, but if there is no list, we can't do anything. It's all the WIPO will reach is to undertake to create a list based on its expertise and standard trademark principles, which are well established in the law around the world as to what constitutes an internationally famous mark. It's then up to us, in the face of that list, to make a decision about whether we want to do anything at all. We need to do a thing with it, but at least if the list is available and has been prepared by experts with credibility and legitimacy, we can, if we choose, make a decision about it. As far as referring it to the DNSO working group, I think the answer is that the working group has, I think, had a very long time to consider this and is going to make its own recommendations. And I think it simply needs to be looked at. But my strong recommendation to this board would be to allow WIPO to create the list rather than sit around deciding whether we want one and then decide later if and when we want to use it.
Let's see. Okay. Ken, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I sort of a supportive of Jonathan's comment and others, that my understanding of the intent of this is to be supportive of the Names Council and to work in consultation with them, as it says there, but keep things moving and to walk the fine line of preparing generic things and not to get too far, get in front of them at all on policy making things. Whether the words are to allow WIPO to do something, and there are other ways, I think, too, as well, to encourage WIPO so that the physical world out there prepares things and we as a technical coordination group can react to what is then available. And that list, the list there is very good.
I wonder if we could separate Jonathan's proposal into a discussion on a new motion and see if we're of a mind to approve the one we're on. Is that agreeing?
Yeah.
And then we're around the Hans.
Yeah, on this same topic, I feel very comfortable with the resolution as it is now, because we're asking the Name Council to give us a recommendation on the issues. As regards the possible activity of WIPO in this respect, I believe the only thing I can could do is to recognize and support activities of the participants in WIPO to do the activity. And I would support a separate motion to express that feeling. But we cannot go to WIPO, I believe, to ask WIPO to do anything.
Let's see, we had Esther and then Ken.
2 points. I mean, if what Jonathan says is true, they can't do it without someone asking them. And I don't see how it prejudices us to suggest or ask them to do it as long as we reserve judgment on how we'll use it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of a lot of this, but I think in terms of timing, let's get moving. And if this is a practical way to get moving, let's do it.
But I do believe that a number of governments are already considering asking WIPO to do it. So if they need a push from us, then we can recognize that effort and support the effort.
Sure. That would make a whole lot of sense, too.
Okay.
I guess
two things. First of all, I think we want to make progress on this resolution because it's relatively innocuous, so I'd like to get on with that. But with respect to the famous names list, I don't find it inconsistent for us to observe, maybe in a separate notion, that having such a list would be quite helpful. I don't know whether it's sufficient, Jonathan, for us to observe that having a list is helpful as opposed to asking you to create it. If it's sufficient to simply observe that it would be helpful, then maybe that's how the resolution could be worded.
I think what I'm advised is that, and there's no question both you and Hans are correct, that there are moves afoot and will be shortly to encourage member states to request WIPO to do it. But I am advised that a request from this board simply to prepare it, reserving all right to do what, if anything, we want with it, would be sufficient for them because it was mentioned in the earlier report prepared by them at the behest of this board and at the suggestion of the Secretary of Commerce. And accordingly, they will act immediately, meaning starting today, and could be up and running in less than 30 days, and apparently could thus provide a list probably by September.
The chair would observe that we're debating a motion that's not before us.
That's right.
And I think that we should finish our work on the motion that's on the floor.
Good enough.
Is there further discussion on the motion that's before us? May I have a motion to approve? Hans, second from Rob. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Fine. Now, Jonathan, would you let me observe one thing, and that is since the world at large tends to draw inferences from what we do that may be not justified entirely, perhaps we could have this resolution worded in a way that makes clear that ICANN is not injecting itself into the world of trademarks.
All right.
And that we certainly look forward to the day when the world of trademarks is able to provide us with a uniform, coherent, and easy-to-use solution to the famous names problem.
But I would propose a motion that says that in response to a request, no, sorry, an offer by WIPO to prepare a list of internationally famous trademarks, which may or may not be useful to or acted upon by this board. The board, in response to concerns expressed by a large number of stakeholders, has asked that WIPO proceed with preparing such a list on the clear understanding that this board reserves the right to take or not to take action in connection with such list.
Is there a second?
Top, guys. Okay. We have a second,
and then we can discuss.
All right.
We can discuss.
We'll stipulate the second in discussion. Then,
I think Hans and I have similar ideas here. Rather than saying that we ask the board, can we simply urge WIPO to proceed? This is not quite the same as asking you to do something, and I think this resolves the awkward problem of not engaging in the trademark manner, but at the same time expressing our real desire to see such a list be created. So I would revise that to simply say that the board urges WIPO to proceed.
Linda?
I was going to say much the same thing. I really think we should be very careful about this and not do anything to confuse our constituencies with what is the nature of this organization's responsibility.
Jim?
Yes, I would support some of that and maybe even try and rephrase it, but I spent 8 months on that panel with WIPO, and I heard a lot of what they do and how they
do things, and so I sure would want to feel comfortable that, if I'm hearing something different, and if we are proceeding on the baseline that we're a technical coordination, we could observe that having such a list available would greatly facilitate the introduction of these things, instead of even urging, just observe that they would, and then through the other various channels that WIPO has to react to the member states to do things, and they need either within the existing assignment or separately to get on the list.
Yeah,
I would be happy to talk to my contacts both in my government and at WIPO.
I would feel more comfortable with observe, if assuming that these other entities are also initiating this activity.
It seems to me one idea the board might find advantageous if you want to observe that it would be advantageous to the board in reaching a conclusion on this to have such a list, that you might also instruct the staff to formally provide the resolution to the Government Advisory Committee, which could act through its members.
I'm not aware of an offer myself, other than what I've heard from Jonathan, and I don't distrust that, and I'm very happy and excited about it.
If it's the sense of the board that this is generally a good idea, you might instruct the staff to determine the precise manner in which it ought to be implemented and come back to you prior to the next meeting with the language. Yes, sir?
Jonathan actually had his hand up, but all I want to say is, if we're going to do it, let's take the responsibility for doing it as a board and not lay it off on the staff, but we should come to a decision quickly.
Okay. What I wanted to say was, before we go from urge to observe to wonder, I would suggest that if people aren't comfortable with a direct request, which I don't agree with, but if that's the sense of the board, so be it, then I would prefer the word support. In other words, it was WIPO's request to this board, or offer to this board to do it. And if we simply support that offer, that doesn't urge them, it doesn't ask them, but it says, if you want to do it, you say you'll do it, then we support you doing it. But as long as you reserve clearly the right not to do anything about it, so be it.
Linda?
What does support mean? Are you talking about financial support?
No, I mean it's a good idea. It's a good idea. Go ahead and do it if you got it.
I think we ought to use language that says that.
Well, that's
the
fine.
Support has a...
Then you can say something instead of saying we urge, and say we understand they've offered to do it, and we think it would be a good idea if they did it.
Shades of the person who wanted us to speak like Clinton.
just sorry on the procedure. This offer, I may have missed something here. I mean,
it was in their original report. When we asked for a report,
the one of you,
a long time ago. If you look in there, you'll see that they made an offer in that report to prepare such a list. We didn't act upon it at that time because I don't think we were ready to do so. It would appear in my mind that we're now ready at least to see the list if they want to prepare it, and we'll decide at the time what, if anything, we want to do.
May I propose some language for resolution and see if we can move forward? Whereas the World Intellectual Property Organization has offered to prepare a list of globally famous trademarks, resolved, the board notes that such a list would be helpful to the board in its deliberations.
That's the best we can do.
Possibly add some language and refer to the WIPO report.
I'd like to suggest that. I'm sorry, Pinger, I didn't. I'd like very much, so in the interest of clarity, since there's been so much controversy about who's doing what for whom in this area, that Louis, that we add the precise antecedent reference, because our constituents are not aware of any offer, so we ought to go back to the document and pick up the specific language of the prior reference.
That's fine.
So are we prepared to deal with this issue now, or is there anyone who wants further discussion? We have revised language from Louis. Are we going to put it up?
We don't have it up. I'll do it orally. Well, okay. Okay. Let me read.
We'll write.
Okay, whereas the World Intellectual Property Organization, in its April 30th, 1999 report to ICANN, has offered to prepare a list of globally famous trademarks, resolved, the board notes that such a list would be helpful to its assessment of proper action on the topic.
On the topic of the introduction of new GTLD, or new
okay,
GTLD.
That's even better. Yes, on the topic of expansion
of the TLD space.
Of the TLD space.
You could take that on the topic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we now have revised language before us. Is there further discussion on the revised language? All in favor? Opposed? Abstaining? The motion passes unanimously. Do we wish to now go back and pick up at large, or would you like to do one of the intervening action items? The staff is almost ready to deal with the at large. And you have before you a draft language. Joe, are you going to lead us through draft language? Let me say a couple of introductory words. The board has heard a great deal of input on this subject, both written and oral. It's spent considerable time deliberating on this matter. It finds great merit in much of the material that's been presented to the board, and it has now before it a staff draft of a resolution that takes action on the cluster of issues that are before us regarding the at-large membership of ICANN. Joe?
I think the best way to deal with this probably is to walk through it clause by clause, because it is a complicated resolution for which the staff apologizes, but we had a lot of issues to try to include.
If you can try and do a sort of Paul Twomey and actually explain the meaning of
That's what I was going to try to do. The first whereas clause is simply background, and I will just summarize that for the board. It recites that we have previously adopted a variety of resolutions dealing with the at-large membership that are contained in Article 2. It notes that since that time the board has received considerable input from the community relating to Article 2, both its conceptual base and the practical implications of it. It recites that the board is persuaded that despite considerable efforts by lots of people, including the board and staff and others, that there remain a considerable diversity of views about the purpose and rationale of the at-large membership and the at-large council, and about the advisability of the various electoral structures and procedures that are now set forth in Article 2. The board is persuaded that these divergent views have the effect of creating fundamentally different perspectives about the expected or desired results of the continuation of the at-large processes now underway. And as a result of all that, the board has concluded that both the concept and the execution of the at-large membership requires careful and thorough reconsideration. The second whereas clause notes that notwithstanding all this, it is important that the various stakeholders that do not or cannot easily participate in the ICANN process through the supporting organizations have a voice in the development of ICANN policy, and that such opportunity should not have to wait for the results of this reconsideration process. But the board notes, the resolution notes, that the board believes that any solution to this problem pending the outcome of the reconsideration should ensure that, as is the case with the directors selected by each of the supporting organizations, the at-large directors that sit on the board during this reconsideration process should not by themselves, acting in the aggregate, be able to control the actions of the board. And finally, it recites that the board believes it can meet all of these objectives with the following set of actions. Therefore, the board directs the staff to draft and present to the board for its review and subsequent posting for public comment prior to adoption various amendments of the bylaws and other resolutions that accomplish the following objectives. One, establish a deadline for the initial selection of 5 at-large directors, 1 each representing each ICANN region, by a direct ballot of qualified ICANN members in each region by no later than November 1st, 2000, to serve a term to expire at the conclusion of the annual meeting of the corporation in 2002, or in other words, approximately a 2-year term. 2, extend the terms of 4 of the initial at-large directors, identities to be determined on the basis of willingness, probably the toughest hurdle, geographic and other factors, to expire at the conclusion of the annual meeting of the corporation in 2001. In other words, extend the terms of 4 at-large members for approximately 1 year. Establish a nominating committee consisting of members appointed by the board to accept recommendations and nominations from the internet community as a whole and to nominate 5 or more candidates for consideration by the at-large membership for selection to the ICANN board. In addition to the nominating committee, number 4, establish a petition process for additional nominations from the at-large membership that meet certain minimum qualifying criteria. And final, 5, initiate a comprehensive study of the concept, structure, and processes relating to the at-large membership on the following schedule. The study to begin promptly following the election of the 5 at-large directors, which should take place no later than November 1st of 2000, with such initial design as is feasible of the study to be done prior to that time. Next, the results of the study to be presented to the board no later than the 2nd ICANN quarterly meeting in 2001, in other words, approximately a 6-month period. The ICANN board to consider the results of the study and propose for public comment whatever actions it deems appropriate as a result on a schedule that would permit taking final actions no later than the annual meeting of the corporation in 2001, in other words, approximately a 2nd 6-month period, and implementation of any actions taken so that any subsequent at-large elections can take place on a schedule that would allow those directors to be seated by the conclusion of the annual meeting in 2002. In other words, implementation of the actions taken at the annual meeting of 2001 so that any subsequent at-large elections can be held with the proper outreach, education, et cetera, process, and the results could be, the resulting person selected could be seated at the following annual meeting. And then finally, just as a housekeeping matter, suspend the provisions, the current provisions of Article 2 that currently set forth the structure and processes for the selection of at-large directors. If I could just wrap this up in a very simple summary, It provides for a relatively early this year election of 5 directors by the at-large electorate in each, one in each region, one from each region. 4, it calls for the retention of 4 of the initial at-large directors to stay on the board for the term of the study and the determination by the board of the results of that study, in other words, approximately 1 year. And it then calls for the results of that study to be implemented during the next year so that the entire process is finished by the annual meeting in 2002.
Thank you very much. That's an awful lot of material to put on 3 pages of paper in such a coherent manner. Is there discussion? Great.
Thank you, Mike and Esther. I've been closely associated with the at-large membership structure for some time, and I have been trying to move to a timetable that would achieve the initial objectives of the board and progressively overcome problems as we saw them. And that had brought us to the position we'd reached at the annual general meeting in Los Angeles, and we have action in hand by the staff working very hard to turn that those resolutions into reality so that to be confronted by a substantial change in the process at this stage has been rather difficult to come to grips with. But I am considering a number of issues. The pressure for directly elected at-large directors has always been there. And countering that has been the concern that the board has seen of the potential disruptive consequences through the corporation laws of California. And indeed, in Santiago, we decided that the risks associated with those potential disruptions were not warranted for the board, and that we should proceed in another direction, namely indirectly elected directors. And we've moved on from there. I think one cannot but be impressed by the continuing and widespread pressure observed at the open meeting yesterday for direct election of at-large directors. And again, one must weigh up the relative risks, I expect, of that in meeting the very clear objectives, desires of the stakeholders. There are some elements of this resolution that certainly have merit. In particular, the concept of a nominating committee that takes care to make sure that the candidates for the board are suitable in the sense that they will bring necessary skills, aptitudes to the board of ICANN and assist in the corporate governance of the corporation. That may or may not arise through a popular election, either through direct elections or through an at-large council and indirect elections. And so that I see this as merit, and I am also persuaded that we are a corporation set out to achieve specific objectives, and this is in fact how corporations work generally in filling their board positions. The board will select suitable candidates for vacancies that meet their needs for skills and for the development of a coherent team spirit within the board, and present their candidates to the members for ratification. And by and large, the members do then ratify or select from those that panel of nominated directors. So I think that element in this proposal has merit. I'm also persuaded that notwithstanding the excellent work that the staff have been doing and the hard work that has been done by the Membership Advisory Committee in the past, there are still a lot of issues that need to be sorted out in detail, and that we are moving rapidly and tending perhaps to be a little ad hoc in solving those problems as we go. So although I
I think, naturally resist the thought of further delay before reaching a conclusion. I am perhaps a little reluctantly drawn to the conclusion that that delay may be necessary in order to spend much more time in thinking through the at-large process. And in the meantime, to elect under the system that's proposed here, a group of at-large directors that can come on board and that can then, I think, more truly represent the interests of the at-large community through their process of selection and nomination and then direct election. So that whereas earlier on I was moving from opposition to perhaps abstaining, I admit now, after sleeping on it, that I am prepared to support this motion.
Thank you very much. Let's see. I think Vint had his hand up, and then Pinda, and then Esther.
Well, I'm actually going to steal a comment that Kant made that you should be aware of. I think if we do this, will we be down to 5 directors as of September? In other words, the absolute total of directors would be 5 less than it is right now, until such time as 5 new ones were appointed by this process.
As a result of the study.
No, that would not occur. As a result of this, if we extend the terms, which it calls for, on 4 of the at-large directors.
No, that's not correct, because until you actually get 5 new directors, we will be down 5.
I'm sorry.
That's all that we're saying. And as long as the board is conscious of operating with 5 fewer people than we have now, and they're comfortable with it for a period of time, it's fine. I think I thought you would have done the business.
There's a little.
I just want to make sure the board's conscious of that. I don't find it impossible. I just want to make sure you're aware of it.
We did it with 10.
Yeah, you put up an important point, and frankly, you've lost me at least. I don't know how many else other people are. Rehearse again. Where's the point at which we'll lose the 5 without gaining 5?
Let's assume at the end of September that normally 9 directors would end their terms, and we're saying extend 4. That means we're down 5. In order to replace those 5, we have to have completed the nomination and selection process to put those 5 people on the board, and I don't know that that's completed until November or something. So there's a period of time when we are down.
The light bulb is going on, and since you're directing the staff to take the input to draft the documents, if it's your pleasure to fix that problem, we can certainly do that.
Well, the simplest way to deal with this problem is to ask that the directors not depart until their replacements have been found. In which case, we continue with these.
So we have that on the floor. Let's go to Esther.
Actually, this is a follow-up point, because this seems to be the date for November 1. I thought we were on a September 30th deadline. Is there an assumption inbuilt here that we will get an extension for that? Because I was at the GAC meeting and they would express that.
The only, if you will, statutory item we have does not refer to the elections or seating. It refers to the expiration of the terms of the initial directors.
Right, so
we're free to make concrete what our desires are.
So with respect to that and Vin's comment, is there a separate action item with respect to the September 30th deadline to get around this down 5 problem?
Well, presumably we will revise this resolution to complete your instructions to the staff. This is not implementing language, this is direction to the staff. Louis, you wanted to make
a point. Mike, if I can. I think Vint raises a good point, which I was confused about. And thank you, Vint. Implicit in this, but we should make it explicit in our directions, in your directions to the staff. Implicit in this is that the existing MOU with the Department of Commerce, which is scheduled to expire by its terms today, on September 30th of the year 2000, would have to be extended for some period of time. It's perfectly legitimate and probably appropriate for the board to make explicit to the staff its directions to see that that happens. Now, that in and of itself simply takes care of an accompanying administrative detail. The board could also, and it probably is a wise idea, and I apologize for not focusing on the point earlier, the board could also direct the staff to have the terms of all of the at-large directors extended through the end of the annual meeting in 2001, thus eliminating that overlap and having the terms of the five new at-large directors begin at the conclusion of the annual meeting in 2001. In 2000. So you would avoid the overlap or the losing five problem, and you would have the full board through the annual meeting of this year.
Let's see, Amadeo. I'm sorry.
Okay.
My first reaction was we survived with 10 directors, and, but I guess the fewer changes, the better, and so it would create some continuity. To go back to what's really happening here, when the initial board was seated, there was huge outcry, and sort of one of our strongest principles was that we would be gone by the end of September 30. And I just sort of want to note for the record that tone has really changed, and we really are responding, I think, to some public demand to stick around. The second thing, though, is that the notion of the nominating committee, the goal here is to choose quality directors. And one side of me really likes that. The other side says, well, again, you're kind of putting all the control in the same place. So the nominating petition idea needs to be constructed carefully so that it also produces good people, so that if you produce one good person, I mean, there's this issue of the slate. Can you reduce the formal slate down to four and stick one additional person in? And that's going to require some work on the part of the staff, and I don't know whether we want to make it clear that we do want to be open to people coming from outside what the nominating committee chooses to bring in, if you like.
Let's see, did Pindar, did you complete the opportunity?
Yes, you said so.
Sort of drafting notes. You know, there are basically two approaches to that. One is to set a fixed number of people that have to sign your petition. The other is to set a percentage of the overall membership. My guess would be that given that we don't have any idea really how large the membership's going to be, it might make sense to set a fixed percentage. And I mean, we can always adjust that if it turns out to be too large to be practical. But you're right that it's really important to decide how high you want to set the bar.
And you also get into the complication of the geographical diversity. You know, you have the nominating committee selects five people, and they're carefully geographically chosen. And now someone wants to nominate someone else. That person comes from a particular region. I don't have any solution to this, but we've got to, you know,
Pardon me, did you finish? Yes, sir.
Yeah. I don't know that the geographic diversity is a particular difficulty, but I would like to emphasize that the design of this resolution is that for the five directors in this, in paragraph one, they are each a regional director, each having a regional seat and elected by a regional electorate.
Yes.
So that people would presumably petition to put on someone for a particular seat.
But that's where you get the complication. I don't know. I mean, you regionalize everything.
Yes.
And I don't know what to say, but it's an issue.
It's something that we'll work on when we present something to the board.
The other thing I want to say, and I thought actually this is what Greg was going to talk about. We've had the MAC, we've had the Membership Implementation Task Force, we were going to have the At-Large Council. If we're going to go to these direct elections, we need something which may be simply a continuation of the MITF turning into the At-Large Council, but we need some at-large council of some kind whose job, even if it is no longer to select the directors, is going to be to represent ICANN back to the various, both regional and other kinds of constituencies, you know, whether it's geography, profession, gender, I don't know what, but there needs to be a body of people, volunteers, who somehow have some semi-formal standing to do this.
Okay, right now we have Amadeo and Vint and Jonathan and Jean-Francois and Hans. I'd just like to make one comment, and that is one of the chores that the staff has to do, depending on how you take action on this, is to give you an explicit listing of the steps, the scope of the steps, and the timing of the steps to actually do what you're proposing to do here. We've had a lot of comment in the last several days about you can do this, you can do such and so in so many weeks, versus no, you can't do it in so many weeks. And I think it does affect how we adopt this, which is still in front of us. And I take it on the staff to give you a relatively detailed view of what we conceive to be how you do nominations, how long that takes, consultations, what is a reasonable period for consultations, what is a reasonable period for petitions, and so forth. And we'll try over the next several weeks to pull that together and come back to you for consideration. So, Amadeo, I think you're next.
Okay. As I said yesterday, I don't have any kind of religious belief that direct elections are better than indirect elections or nomination committees are better than anything else. What we are doing here somehow is taking note that we have failed so far to produce a perfect system, and we are offering a partial solution that at this moment could satisfy, only, we hope, we could satisfy a larger part of the ICANN process, because it has many of the mechanisms in there. It's direct and then simple to understand, and with a clear idea for the voter that what they are voting for. It has a nomination committee plus petition, which ensures that probably good candidates can be identified and looked for, but also offers the possibility for the community to nominate wherever they want to be in the same slate. It ensures geographical diversity and so forth. The question is that it's still a partial solution. It's a partial solution because we decided to go direct for these five directors now, which is a magical number meeting the five regions. It's a larger number than ASOS to make sure that a large, that it's diverse in itself, has a diverse representation. But still prevents some of the fears we had about capture, because it's not the majority of the board. It's not a blocking majority of the board in itself and alone, as any other of the ASOS is not. So this is a solution that works for 2000 and 2001. But indeed, we still have to decide the final part. And the final part is what we do with the remaining four seats. We go direct, we go indirect, we don't go at all. We extend that until up to 35,000 new directors. This is a solution that probably this board is not taking, because we are taking note of our complete failure to produce a satisfactory solution. And we endeavor a study that will be serious, diverse, and representative, we hope. Probably they will come to the same conclusions as us. There is no perfect system. But no system is perfectly imperfect in such. It depends on the circumstances. And we have good faith that the circumstances will evolve into a more favorable ambience, environment, to take reasonable decisions. But the question here is that I have three problems with the current state of affairs. The first one is that I am, and sorry about that, my dear colleagues, I am against the extension of the term for the initial directors. It was always the clear understanding that was for the initial board to establish the company, to help all of us coming here. You are doing a good job. I, as a director, will miss you a lot. But as an ICANN participant, I think that we should not extend the term. Sorry about that. Not beyond the end of the year, by the way. The second thing is that I think it's unfortunate that everything in the staff report here goes in November. November is the magic day when we go to Los Angeles to have all full meet and renew the board. And also in November 91, we will have four alleged directors that will leave immediately after taking this decision. We will have at least four ESO directors also leaving at the moment, three but probably four, leaving 1 week before that meeting. So we will have three or four, or perhaps even five. And so the records coming just the day before, reading the whole thing and having to take a decision, I think it's not the right moment. So perhaps one meeting after. Why after? Because I don't want to be there to vote on that. Because I was one of the mess organizers. I'm not the one who has to decide what to do with other four. We are just presenting this partial solution. We shouldn't be the board as a majority that should take that decision. If we take the decision and we do that before the 1 and 2 years SO members leave that are currently here, the majority of the board will be people now sitting at the table in the current terms. If we do that after, I think it could be better, but not immediately after, not one day after. I was in Los Angeles, I just was a board member for 1.5 days when I had to vote, for instance, in the MSI agreements. This is not a good experience. The third thing, sorry, is that regional diversity, yes, regional electorates, I think it's, I was against that in Berlin, Singapore, I'm still against. There are some provisions to have a minimum. What we need is not, for instance, now we are in Africa, we've been discussing that with many local people. We are not electing the African president. We are not electing the African representative. We want a good African voice. What's really important is the selection and the nomination. Who votes for that? Perhaps it's less important whether there are 200 or 2,000 Africans already enrolled in the membership. But by no way should we prevent a region to have a voice in the board simply because we, as ICANN, fail to enroll enough people from that region.
Thank you very much. I think we're now up to Ben.
Well, I'd like to speak generally in favor of this proposal. I accept some of what Gabriel is saying as issues, but I would like to say that this process has worked well for the Internet Society every year and also for the IAB and the IETF. The nominating committees can be given instructions as to what it is that they're supposed to accomplish in terms of the where are the holes in the board that need to be filled. That could be geographic, it could be expertise, it could be a variety of things. So I think there's ample flexibility in this structure to allow a good slate of candidates to be prepared. I don't quite know what to do about Abriel's concerns that in November too many things are happening at once. And I'm also a little disappointed if you resist the idea of serving a couple of months more than had been planned, unless you're saying that you don't think any of the initial board members should have extended terms at all. Is that the way to understand you?
No. What I'm saying is that my feeling is that we cannot be in a solution in a situation where the majority of the board, this current board, the majority of members of this board takes the final decision on what to do in this at-large membership. If we extend my term, for instance, I am a 2 years director, then it will be 6 SO directors plus the 4 current initial directors extended. That will be 10. That's still not the 2/3. That's a clear majority of the board sitting there and probably driving the discussions. And I submit that it should be a board where the majority are not the current directors, or at least not under the current term of office.
If we had been able to solve this problem 6 months before, then it would have been this board that made the decision. So it sounds like you're resisting what you would have been able to do 6 months ago if we'd been able to figure it out.
Well, let's see. Thank you very much. I think we're now up to Jonathan Cohen.
Abigail, I sympathize with what you're saying, but I have a suggestion. I can't answer your question about extension of the terms except to say that I think that the current, while in principle I think it perhaps there ought to be a resignation of all the existing directors, the practical reality is that these directors have a great deal of experience. I think they have finally and deservedly received credibility and confidence of the community, and I think to have them all leave now during this transition period would not be in the best interest of the board or of the corporation, and therefore I think it's the right decision. But let me address some of what you said, Annabelle, because I was going to say beforehand that perhaps one of the things we can do about the November thing is I've always been a bit uncomfortable about the kind of loosey-goosey nature of when directors come and go, and I think this may be an opportunity to fix it in the drafting, and simply indicate that as a consequence of our discussions, we believe that when new directors come in, it would be in the interest of the corporation that there be some changeover period, and that would logically seem to me to be when elections take place in the fall prior to the annual general meeting, that all directors' terms will expire after the annual general meeting in the fall, so that newly elected directors in any given year will come to that annual general meeting, be able to participate, observe, liaise with the existing directors, and then move on. And there's certainty for all as to when their term expires. Directors will serve, if it's 1 year, 4 meetings, and then retire, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that would perhaps answer some of the concerns and, again, be in the best interest of the corporation.
Andrew, you're next. Let me just make a technical note, which is that the way the resolution is drafted, it is, and the way that the bylaws work, there is actually supposed to be phased rollover. In other words, on September 30th, the three SO directors whose terms expire will be replaced by three new SO directors. So October 1st, you've got three directors changing over. Then in November, the old directors will sit through the meeting, and the newly elected ones will take office immediately after the meeting.
But will it be at the meeting?
In other words, they'll be elected, they'll be able to physically be there at the meeting, and then there'll be a handover. In other words, Amadeo, they won't be asked to vote on anything in November. Their terms will begin immediately at the conclusion of that meeting, leading up to the next board meeting and so forth. So basically, your suggestion that we put it off one more meeting is already incorporated into this proposal.
That's right.
So I think that there is staggering in that way.
I'm suggesting that rather than do that for purposes of certainty and for the same purposes you're suggesting with replacing existing directors, that every director know that their term will expire after the annual general meeting, so that if you're a one-year director, it's after the next general annual meeting, which will mean that each newly elected director will be elected before that meeting, will have an opportunity to come to the meeting, sit through the meeting, liaise with the person they're replacing, and then take office, and so on. You get a little continuity and some certainty.
Okay, well, let's consider that. Let's keep going on the discussion. We can come back to that either in this resolution or in the next one. We're now up to Jean-François.
Well, first of all, when I asked you to talk, I'm not even being talked yet. I think the organization is building up. It's building its own history, and the input of whoever has participated so far is valuable. So I disagree with this point. On the two, the fact that all of the proceedings are public allow newcomers who will come on the board to have a better grasp of what has happened before, which of course was not the case of the initial people since we had to build the whole thing. So I think the fact that there is such a sharing of ideas, discussion, and so forth allows for a smoother transition. So I'm sort of optimistic on the staggering effect. That was just a remark after Amadeo. My point is more practical. I'd like to see something in the resolution that outlines what would be available in Yokohama. I mean, we are now in March. We want to have an election done in November. We should have an idea of where we stand in the middle of this process. And my suggestion is that the nominating procedure ought to be clear and, ought to be discussed before and presented and approved at the Yokohama meeting for the whole process to be efficient.
Thank you. I'll take that into account as we draft the proposed milestones and scope steps that we go forward. On my list, we're now up to Hans.
Thanks, Mike. Let me start by expressing my admiration to legal counsel for the crafting of a compromise solution to where we were and where people meant that we had to go. I still feel a little bit uneasy by certain elements, but the reference to other organizations who followed similar procedures
convince me of the possibility and the quality criteria to get to new directors. There is one observation, though, I would like to make as to the resolution itself. You will not be surprised that the discussion and the input has not persuaded me. So I could support the resolution if we change where it reads "is persuaded" by "has observed." So in C, the board has observed that there remains, despite considerable efforts, etc. And in D, the board has observed that these widely divergent views have the effect of creating fundamentally different perspectives out of the expected and desired results. If my fellow board members could agree on that modification, resolution will have my support.
Without objection, we'll proceed. We're now on my list down to Rob and then Esther. Yes.
With this modification, I'm even stronger in favor of this motion. That's one thing. I want to make one or two observations about the election procedure. It has been, I have an 11-year experience of running international internet-related organizations, and this is a set of procedures that I can recognize. I know this may sound a bit strange or unexpected or for people not that well experienced on the internet, but there are a whole lot of internet-related organizations who have on a global scale elect boards or committees or whatever who follow similar lines, and it, our experience is it works. So I am very strongly in favor of both the underlying ideas and the proposed implementation of the elections.
Thank you. Could I make a comment here that I think since we're converging shortly here, I'd also like to hear from the directors that have not spoken so far, but I have asked already. Esther, Linda, and Ken are currently on my list.
Okay. First, I see a lot of reason for the current at-large members to be extended through November. I don't quite see the rationale for having four of them stick around for another year. I mean, again, Amadeo says, well, the guys who leave shouldn't be deciding just as they depart, but in fact that was the idea behind the initial at-large, that they should not be designing a system to accommodate themselves, but to be design a system that they thought would be good for the people who came after them. So, yeah, if someone has an answer to that, I'd just be interested to hear it. I don't think it's a terrible idea, but it's whatever. It's questionable for a bunch of reasons. Second, just to Jonathan's point, I think about let's have everybody come and go at the same time in November. You're always going to come up with a situation that a director resigns, so you're going to end up with partial terms. Not a big deal. The final one is, at some point we're going to, and I don't know whether it's required to be in the resolution or not, but there is this wealth of experience that we're being offered, and I know some people don't appreciate it, by CDT and their partners in election procedures and stuff like that. And I think it can be useful. And so I hope we'll continue to work with them on how these things are actually run, on the whole issue of outreach, on translation, on all the stuff we talked about so much yesterday. Let's not forget it. We're not simply talking about electing new directors. We're also talking about all the, if you like, social and communication infrastructure that goes around it. Because if we're doing this in part because we're concerned about the quality of what the elections may produce, let's not simply lower the risk, but let's also raise the possibility that we will have an informed, intelligent, active, reasonable, productive, constructive electorate. And the way to do that is to engage in education and outreach.
Thank you. We're now down to, pardon me, Linda, thank you.
I'm really relieved, actually, to see the direction that we've been going in, as hard as it has been to get here. But I would like to remind us all that what we have been doing is inventing a whole lot of things in a brand new territory. And there's been a tremendous amount of contribution on this, not the least of which, in addition to the work of board members and the constituencies, there's been some very hard work on the staff. And I want to take a moment to express appreciation for the quality of the work of the staff that has put before us the issues and the key questions that we need to focus on. I think the staff paper on membership that was posted before this meeting was particularly helpful in our being able to move forward on this. I think one of the missing pieces for us up to this point has been the sense that we were really getting a good handle on an international basis about how to move forward. And that's part of the reason why I'm very much in favor of the more comprehensive study that is in this staff recommendation. As we move forward, I think this board, as all boards, whether they're boards for profit organizations or nonprofit organizations, have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the members of the board are thoroughly focused on the particular mission of the organization, not coming with a lot of agendas that are ancillary to that or orthogonal to that, as well as the quality of those board members in terms of their knowledge base and their experience in functioning in a corporate board context. That is what leads to the kind of accountability and legitimacy that I think we're looking for in the board for this extraordinarily important organization to ensure the infrastructure of the internet. So the participation is a very important part of that, and I think that's what we were struggling for with the at-large operation. As we go forward and mature, one of the things that will help us is the transparency we've been trying to build so that individuals who might ever be willing to serve on this board are likely to have been knowledgeable about what's going on. Our openness to posting helps us on that. In addition, I think we'll probably want to look for some kind of formal orientation of new board members, as opposed to having people come on board and all of a sudden cold turkey, you need to do it. I think the move to have the terms expire at the end of the annual meeting is one way to make that happen very well. I'm pleased to see the role of the nominating committee, which helps to ensure that not only do individuals come who are very knowledgeable, but the team gets built in a way that covers the territory of knowledge bases and experiences and geographical representation. Using a nominating committee and having an opportunity for open petitions to come qualified in some way keeps it from being captured by a board and just a self-perpetuating kind of organization, and we do want to avoid that. So you've got the balance there. I think after the study, we will need to come out with what will be the situation long-term in the way this organization functions. So we will probably also need some kind of transition from whatever we have as a result of this and the new game. I don't think we're likely to be able to anticipate that now as we design what will happen while we do the study. So, and that can't really be done until we know what the study produces and our consultation. So I think that although there are some complexities and there are terms that will expire, there are a number of minor adjustments that could be made to prevent our having a disaster anywhere. And I think we're making a major step forward if we can go along with this resolution as we're fixing it here today. And I would be able to support it.
Thank you very much. I would just show that I now have Ken, Phil, Geraldine, June, Greg, Pindar, and Hans.
So if we could go with one. I will try to be brief. I'm supportive of this resolution and appreciative of the efforts, and other people have said it very eloquently. Just my own personal experience and background is very much comfortable with direct elections, nomination committees, petition, and procedures. So that part I'm comfortable with. The point I wanted to make was one that actually Esther then did make a few minutes ago on outside assistance, but I was going to make it more general. Mike, a few minutes ago you listed a number of things you would be back with, and I thought one of them also could be to what extent, if any, we seek outside assistance in the process, and with also the possibility that some of that assistance could even be non-U.S. based organizations that may have assistance.
Yeah, I think that's the general idea, and I'd just say that my current intention is, as you've indicated, is that the nominating committee and the election committee will be led by the board with appropriate outside assistance. You haven't voted on that, but that sense will be in the resolutions that come back to you.
Very good.
Let's see, we're now down to Phil.
Yes, thank you. I think I can fairly say that I support most of the things in this resolution, but I do accept that it doesn't correspond to my views on every point, and I wouldn't expect it to. And having listened to some of the discussion yesterday, I have observed and been persuaded on different points. So I think that if we look at the resolution, it's a clear request to the staff to actually do a lot of hard work, which will open some of the issues again. But I think we have clearly stated the objectives, and I think during the discussion yesterday, the objectives of everybody in the room was to elect good directors with the necessary checks and balances and compromises of the different vested interest groups. So on the basis that it seems a reasonable packaged proposal that, if you like, doesn't make everybody happy, but it doesn't make... there's equal pain across all the different interest points. I think I can support it as a good way forward. It puts the corporation, I think, the processes of the corporation onto a good professional footing. Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin.
One of the initial class members, I must say that Cipollini, perhaps for other people, our main goal was to be able to leave the room as soon as possible. And in a way, it's a failure not to have been able to finish the work before September this year. But I think we are putting in place a very important step, which is the first at-large members with the regional approach, which is one of the key objectives to balance the supporting organization approach. And I think this is something we must do at least very soon. The point on which I'm not... I shall be very careful is the nominating committee. I think this is something new in what we've done. It's difficult, and certainly we will find a lot of suggestions when we put it to the public discussion. But if it's something which is in the culture of the internet organization, and I hope it will help us find a good solution for these new directors, which will be very welcome.
Thank you very much, Jim.
My concern has been throughout all the discussions about this thing was how we can achieve the responsibility of the board members as a group, and then I really have my experiences on this model, the final model we are talking about with the nomination process and the petition things, and then I believe that this could solve my concern, my issue. So in that sense, I'm very happy. But again, probably it's really important to achieve that responsibility from the board, then those are nomination process itself is has been always helpful on the other organizations, and so as us. So it's really important for that the board should consider that this part would create the quality of the board. So I support this.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're back to you.
I'd just like to echo Linda's remarks of congratulations to the staff in the way in which they've been able to put this very complex issue into a resolution that we can discuss rationally and understand exactly what it means. I really wanted to comment actually on the discussion about the difficulties over extending the board period for a number of the existing at-large, the existing initial directors, and suggest a rather radical solution, which I don't propose that we necessarily debate too much now or put in the or make an amendment, but maybe
think about imprisonment.
Well, I was thinking of removing the restriction that the members of the initial board cannot stand for re-election until 2 years after their terms end. If you remove that, the possibility exists that that a number may be interested in standing for election at this point in time, and that would give the continuity that a number of people have said they're looking for.
Well, would it serve your purpose if we made that an element of discussion in the process between now and the implementing conference? Okay. That's it.
But I would hope that by now people see that the initial directors are not in this for personal gain, other perhaps than the very interesting personal development that comes from this great experience.
Actually, I've got a sort of comment slash request and a question. The comment slash request is, and having worked with the initial directors, there's a great wealth of experience, and the request here is that even if you may stand down, I do hope you don't go away, and that you do, you know, quickly become a member of the at-large constituency to obviously gain input. That's the request. The question, which actually follows on from Greg's beginning, which was the issue to do with direct and indirect, and why under California law we have this risk of derivative lawsuits. At the risk of asking a silly question, my understanding right now is that we're going to go direct. And as such, what are the legal implications and on these derivative lawsuits?
Pindar, the problem here in giving definitive legal advice is that the state of California law on this issue is mighty sparse. It is clear from the specific explicit terms of the relevant California statutes that members of organizations such as this can be designated to not be statutory members and thus not have the various rights of statutory members, including the right to bring derivative actions. On the other hand, the state of the case law interpreting and applying that language is extremely thin. And so the statute seems clear. If a court follows the words of the statute, the result will be as we have advised you, but you cannot guarantee that that a judge will not do something strange, because from time to time judges do things strange.
Thank you. We're down to Hans and then Esther. Would you like to make comment?
Yeah, may I supplement that? The staff's understanding of this resolution is that it is the board's clear intention to do whatever is necessary to maintain the direction given in Santiago with respect to preserving the corporation's ability to have tailored membership that is specifically applicable to this organization rather than the generalized statutory membership. And we will, unless the board corrects us now, we will draft and comply with this agreement according to that understanding.
Thank you, Hans.
Thank you. Taking up a point made by Esther on the study, I would like to make it clear, maybe even adding a point to point five, item five in the resolution, expressing an open invitation for proposals to do the study, so as not to commit ourselves today to any organization, but to be open and transparent there and do an international open invitation to conduct a study. Thank you.
I think that makes a lot of sense, and also I assume it's not going to be just a single organization. I just want to express again, the more I think about this notion of five and the five regions, the more uncomfortable I get, because, and maybe we want to have three who are chosen specifically to improve the regional diversity, which, given the current composition of the board, would most likely be Africa and Latin America or something. But the whole point of this at-large membership is to generate some diversity and variety. Now, we don't want it captured. We don't want it five people coming with the same agenda. But at the same time, I'm not sure we want it five people, one from each region, and therefore being, if you like, the majority from the region. I'd like some way to have minority representation. It's nicely reduced because it's only five people, but I'm concerned that we end up with just too much majority in this, a slate that is too bland, the majority from each region, and so there's no outlying voice, whether it's, you know, freedom of speech advocates, or who, again, this is not about freedom of speech, but there's something that troubles me about the majority-ness of where we're heading.
Joe, is it coming, and then Amadeo?
Yes. I just make the note that this is an area in which the ankle bone is connected to the shin bone. I mean, there are a lot of difficult complexities in trying to respond to Esther's point, and I would respectfully suggest that you instruct the staff to consider these alternatives and to produce some alternative possibilities to you when they bring the resolution back, because this is not something I think that you could productively determine at this session.
Yeah, and it's probably going to end up in the study, and you know, that's, again, now I'm suddenly thinking, my gosh, I'm not going to be there while they do the study, and I hope somebody is who cares about these issues.
We have Amadeo and Vince. I'd like to observe it's 25 after 10. Amadeo?
To make that completely sure, I will not support any solution that does not guarantee at least one representative for Africa and one from Latin America in this regional slot. At least that. Probably, I'm not willing to settle for anything that also does not guarantee a seat for Asia Pacific as well. For Europe and North America, I'm willing to discuss. So I am willing to accept, that the two come in a general slot. But I am worried again about this minority situation, Esther. I myself find very often a minority position in the world. It means that I fail very often to convince the others on very different issues, but I cannot establish the party of Amadeo being the minority, because there are very different topics and very different issues. Only those that want to represent themselves as minority are the minority here, because when we talk about who is, we talk about IP, the IP legacy, and we talk about many other things that are the subject matter of ICANN. It's very difficult to establish a party of those that will always be the minority. And I repeat, again, I think that we are looking at that from the strictly speaking U.S. political culture. I don't know exactly what's a minority position here by such.
Okay, can I just respond very quickly? You know, I don't do a lot vis-a-vis women. I'm not here representing the women's point of view. And I don't think I think women's interests in the internet are the same as men's. Yet at the same time, I think it is very useful to have women on this board, simply as, if you like, role models, perhaps, as, you know, it just generates diversity, whatever it may be. And I think we're focusing too much on geographical diversity and not enough on other kinds. It's not that I expect, you know, I don't think there's a women's vote, and I don't think there's a women's slate. But let's not just think that if we've done geography, we're done.
Okay, I agree, but this is not the anti-Jewish party. Yeah,
yeah, no, exactly. And it's probably not an issue of how they vote on the issues, but how they think.
Thank you. Again, then that is anybody?
I feel like I've been projected back in time to a poli-sci class at Stanford. I'm having trouble believing I'm sitting in an ICANN board meeting. Our focus, folks, is on the quality of the directors that are focused on ICANN's objectives and not to achieve world government or something. So I hope you don't misunderstand my remark. I am strongly in favor of diversity. I'm just concerned that we're losing the forest for the trees. I do have a substantive question for whoever can respond to this. If a board member resigns, what are the mechanisms for replacing that board member? Do we have procedures?
Yes, let me speak to that.
Give me one moment. In Article 5, Section 12, it deals with vacancies, and it depends a bit on what kind of director that it is resigning, but in general, a new director is selected by the same means that the resigning director was selected. And there, in fact, I think would may need to be some tweaking of this in connection with the bylaw amendments that this resolution would ask the staff to do to accommodate this particular system. But the general design is a vacancy is replaced by a director of the same kind selected in the same way.
So does that mean that there's no power of appointment for interim periods before, for example, an election process or some other similar process is undertaken for that class of directors? I'm only asking because in many cases, certainly at the Internet Society, when we have a departure and it's so far ahead of any normal election cycle that we don't want to lose the opportunity to have someone in that board slot, there's an appointment process that's available. If it's not there, fine. I just wanted to find out.
Yeah. I guess currently it doesn't appear that the bylaws are somewhat ambiguous about it because of the transition from the initial board to this board. I think if we have the board's view on what you want to do, we can tailor Section 12 of Article 5 in the appropriate way to deal with vacancies.
And the clause is written out, Louis, if I'm right, says that the board can appoint replacements for the initial directors. We're now out of the phase of initial directors into the phase of just at-large directors, and so whether if you have some guidance for how you'd like us to do that, either to provide an appointment power, I assume that the complexities of our election system would make it difficult to hold an election off schedule to fill a vacancy.
Let's see, Linda, you had your hand up.
I'm not sure, Andrew, that we are out of the situation of the initial board members until we get to the point that we know what the study is going to do and we've decided, because the at-large members, if we extend some terms, they'll still be initial board members and still subject to the bylaws that restrict what they can do. So I think one possibility is to cross our fingers and hope there are no vacancies between now and the time we finish the study and have part of the study. How do we want to deal with vacancies on the ongoing?
Yeah, I'd like to observe that one reason why we have the bylaw ability to be revised as the board chooses is precisely to allow us to deal with problems like that without getting into too much legislative framework that maybe we live to regret. Greg, did you want to comment?
Just to point out that Article 5, Section 3A, the authorized number of directors shall be no less than 9 and no more than 19. Now that, of course, we have the SA directors, even the resignation of all of the initial directors would not leave us with less than 9. So we don't have
to. Jonathan, did you wish to speak? Maybe I could summarize where we are. The chair observes that we've made one change from persuade to observe, that we've made several comments directing the staff to consider options, alternatives, and special points of emphasis in pulling the package together, that we don't have before us any substantive amendments to the draft that you have seen.
Just one. The extension of the term of the initial boards.
on it.
So we have, just to be clear, Mike, we did add one line, which is on the screens in front of you. It's number 6. In response to Hans's comment, it reads, extend an open invitation to organizations worldwide to assist in the comprehensive study.
Fine.
So we made one amendment, fine. And there is pending Amadeo's suggestion that we delete the part related, which would extend the terms of the initial at-large
draft. Extend beyond end of 2000. I think that until the end of 2000 makes sense, but not beyond that.
Let's see, pardon me just a moment. Amadeo, do you feel strongly enough about this that you actually want to amend the resolution?
Yes.
Or do you want to just say that you'd like to see it considered before the implementing documents come back to it?
Translate.
Okay, thank you. Jonathan?
I guess I don't know whether it's appropriate to put it in this resolution or not, but I still think we should consider making certain the terms of all directors at the end of the annual general meeting.
I think that what we ought to do is to make that a sense of the board that the procedures for the seating of directors ought to be looked at soon with regard to being practical about how that happens. Is that acceptable to you?
Yes.
There is one point that should be made, which is we can't...
We'll have to speak up, I'm sorry.
Sorry, the cord on the mic means I have to step a hunch over it. Jonathan, you should know there is a limitation on our ability to extend the ESSO elected director's terms beyond September 30, 2000. It's not just the bylaws. We have memorandums of understanding with the RIRs and the standards development organizations that provide specific dates. My personal view is it's a very bad idea for us to go back and try to renegotiate those. They have processes in place to elect those directors. That, of course, doesn't apply to the DNSO, but it seems to me that it would be awfully odd to extend DNSO director terms and not the ASO and PSO director terms. So I don't know if that puts the kibosh on your idea, but we'll certainly consider it and come back to the board with our assessment of what's feasible. I think you should know that particular limitation.
Well, it's more trouble than it's worth, obviously not. On the other hand, I do think it makes sense for the board and for directors, and all I would suggest is that perhaps somebody speak to whoever it is, has it in their thing, and if it's something they're willing to look at for that purpose simply and quickly and without a lot of fuss, great. If not, then obviously it's not worth it.
Well, we've had an hour of discussion on a very challenging, perhaps the most challenging action the board has taken in its history. Are we prepared to vote on this resolution, Christy?
Maybe someone could answer the question Amadeo asked implicitly and I asked explicitly. What is the purpose of extending four board members' terms?
Beyond
the end of the end.
Well, let me take a crack and offer the staff view on that, for what it's worth. And that is that we have been reasonably successful over the last year and a half in coming to grips with and dealing with a number of complicated issues. The initial board members, it is our impression, have come to be perceived by the community as significant positive contributors to these results. There is no doubt in my mind that they are not essential to the continued effective operation of this board. None of the individuals that sit on it are. But it does seem to the staff, and that's why we suggested the term that we suggested, that keeping the current size of the board at 19 for the interim period of the study would be desirable for two reasons. One, it would allow us to retain a small number of the initial board members and their experience and expertise. And two, it would tend not to prejudice in any way the outcome of the study by changing the active number of members of the board until that study is completed. If, in fact, the board decides that that it wants to change the size of the board, it will be simple and easy to do that because the terms of four of the members of the board will expire. If the board decides that it wishes to continue the size of the board, it will be simple and easy to do that because the terms of four of the board members will expire. It seemed to us to be the easiest, simplest way to get from here to there without raising any implications that the board had predetermined the outcome of the study that we suggest.
So you can raise your hand up.
Yeah, this is going back to sort of assumptions. There was an assumption that we're going to get possibly an extension to December 30th deadline. Is there also an assumption that some of the initial board directors, four of them, wish to stay on?
Not that I know of. We had some discussion earlier this morning to the effect that that's an issue that ought to be dealt with by the nominating committee.
No. Let me try and rephrase. My understanding is that there will be an extension of how many of the initial directors?
Four.
My question is, are the four or any four initial directors interested in staying on?
More than four. As I said, not to my knowledge, and the suggestion was made in our earlier discussion that the nominating committee ought to deal with the issue.
So what if eight resign?
Well, presumably, if there are not four board members who are willing to serve, then this will turn out to be irrelevant by its terms. But that
yeah, but we could end up with one or two.
Pardon me?
We could end up with one or two.
We could end up with one or two.
That's strange numbers, by the way.
But that would be the result, and this is it seems to me the difference. That would be the result of the individual decisions of individual directors could not be taken in any way as any implication on the outcome of the study. Whereas if the board were to take action to effectively reduce the size of the board today, some people incorrectly would perceive that as a pre-judgment on the outcome of the study, and we thought it was best not to create that impression.
Well, with all due respect to the staff, any solution that carries implications and, you know, possible readings about the outcome we want to have at the end of the study. So there is not a perfect solution here. I should insist, I don't like this provision. I would like amending the motion that if there is any second. If not, you know, we vote on the motion as such, and that's it.
Okay. Let's see. Hans, did you have your hand up?
No.
Has everyone spoken that wishes to speak? Can I have a motion to approve? Rob, and a second? And Jordan? All in favor, say aye.
Amadeo has asked to amend the resolution, and at least he should be allowed to see whether he can get a second for his amendment.
Let's see. I'm sorry if we're miscommunicating because of the length of the table here, but my understanding was that when I asked Amadeo whether he wished to change this resolution versus asking for the alternatives to come back to him in the implementing documents, he said, let's wait. Did I mishear that?
He said translate.
Yeah, because I haven't,
he wanted you to translate what you had said.
Yeah, because I haven't got your message.
I apologize. I completely misunderstood that. So,
you know, miscommunication.
So we should let Amadeo make a motion, see if there's a second, vote on it, and then we can proceed.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is the simplest way, because probably there will be even not a second. The question is that we simply to delay. I don't have the resolution here, sir, but I only delay the part that extends the term for four of the initial alliance directors until November 2001.
Basically, it's eliminating, if you take a look at number one, if you take a look at number two on the screen right now. I understand. Just trying to get the text. So number two currently reads, extend the terms of four of the initial at-large directors, identities to be determined on the basis of willingness, geographic, and other factors, to expire at the conclusion of the annual meeting of the corporation in 2001. There's a second part to the sentence which is not affected by your intention, Amadeo, which is to extend the terms of the other five initial at-large directors to expire at the conclusion of the annual meeting in 2000. presumably you would want to change the 5 to 9 to delete the first clause and change the word 5 to 9. That would be the motion.
Let's see, I think we need to be clear about this, and frankly, could you describe the effect of the amendment?
Yeah, the effect of the amendment would be that all 9 directors would leave the board at the end of the annual meeting in November of this year, and then the board size would go from 19 to 15.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, if I could say, the board size is something which is specified in the bylaws. The number of people occupying board seats would go down to 14. That's why I've been asking about the question of repopulating the board in the interim periods before you can do that.
The bylaws can be between 9 and 18.
So to be clear, I'm not asking to amend the bylaws to change the number of large directors at all. I'm simply saying that some positions are not filled during the pending of the study, because the initial directors simply out at the end of their term. That's it.
So let me say that my understanding, the chair will state the understanding of the proposed amendment, is that we are not going to change the statutory size of the board, which is permissive.
No.
And we would, however, when we extend the terms of the initial directors, the 9 that are now here, we would do it on 9 only until the annual meeting in this year, rather than the split of 5 until this year's annual meeting and 4 until next year's annual meeting.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
Now, the chair will recognize that as a motion by Amadeo. Is there a second?
Yeah, I second it.
Okay, is there discussion on the motion? Let's see, is there, Maya, I think under procedure, we'll just go ahead and vote on the motion to amend the language we just discussed. All in favor say aye. so we get it clear.
Which direction are you voting for right now?
Just the amendment.
For the amendment.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. This is, we did, I saw two votes in favor of the amendment. Do I have that correctly? Okay, now,
yes,
I'm calling for votes against this amendment. Show of hands. All right. Abstaining? Let's see, we have 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 abstentions. Does staff have that correct? Okay. The motion fails. Are we now prepared to vote on the full resolution? Right. The motion is Rob has moved that we approve this resolution. Is there a second? Okay, great. All in favor? Opposed to the resolution? Abstaining? The resolution passes unanimously. Thank you very much. That was hard. Well, I think we'll all take one deep breath and move on to the remainder of the business. We are going to lose our chairman momentarily. Esther,
I would like to cover the next item in Esther's presence.
Well, I was going to ask Esther, did she have a particular? You only, since you have a few minutes, is there anything in particular you'd like us to take up? There is a request down here, by the way, for a break.
Can I just see the list before?
Well, okay.
I mean, the big ones were the TLDs, this thing, and...
Yes.
I don't think
the highest vote requirement that is not dependent on attendance has to do with the ASO, or the supporting organization resolution. And I would suggest that to avoid prejudicing that motion because of the departure of a director, that should be...
This is a rather straightforward item. The chair will call a break as soon as we finish with this straightforward item.
All right. There has been proposed and posted on the website a resolution, which I would like now to read, that involves an amendment to the bylaws. whereas on February 16th, 2000, proposed amendments to Article 5, Section 2, to allow redesignation of the terms of the original directors selected by the supporting organizations were posted on the corporation's website, whereas public comments were solicited on the proposed amendment, whereas no comments were received. Resolved, the following sentence is added to the end of Article 5, Section 2 of the corporation's bylaws. The supporting organizations may, by a two-thirds vote, the supporting organization council may, by a two-thirds vote, revise its designation of which of the selected persons shall serve which of the staggered terms. Such revision shall become effective upon the secretary's receipt within 180 days of the original notification of the written consents of each original director whose term is affected by the revision. And the version that's displayed does have a typo, that the word council has been omitted, but it wasn't what I read. Let me just briefly explain the purpose of this amendment. When the original supporting organizations, the ASO, PSO, DNSO, were asked to provide and select directors for the board, it was done with some degree of urgency, prompted by the staff to get it done so that the directors could be seated by the November meeting. At least one of the supporting organizations in the process didn't feel it had enough time to deliberate and come to a full consensus as to which director should be selected for which purpose. This amendment would allow that, or indeed any other supporting organization, to, by a two-thirds vote of its council, revise the terms of which of the three directors they selected were 1 year, which were 2 years, which were 3 years, and that revision would become effective upon the directors involved agreeing to the change.
And we should point out, this doesn't apply to anything that might happen in the future. This is a one-time bylaw for a one-time fix for a one-time problem that was necessitated by the incredibly rushed schedule that we put on the SO councils to complete these elections. Because you'll note that it refers to original board members selected by the SO directors. It only applies to people who are currently sitting on the board and is only with their consent.
The chair would observe that it's amazing how much language it takes to make a minor correction to solve a minor problem. Is there discussion on the motion? Someone would move approval. Second? Okay, just to go through the order here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? Pindar, the beneficiary, so to speak, of the motion is abstaining. Thank you very much. That passes, and perhaps we could resume at 11. The staff would like to take note of Esther's leadership over a very long and arduous day yesterday. Thank you very much.
And let me take note of the staff's leadership over the long and arduous night preparing all these documents.
The answer is I don't know. I didn't go for breakfast.
Yeah, the thing is
still there, and it hasn't been filled down yet.
So can you make sure it's available until the end of the day?
I put in that request, and if there's some technical impossibility that they have to get the stuff out of there for some reason, they're easily going to take that stuff down now. So that.
whatever else they're doing, they'll be taking down all this equipment.
Also, the risk here is that the switch on the door will shut everything down.
I think what's really Thank you. This has yet to appear on the board's resolution.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I just think we should go over the remaining questions. What is the timing like? Okay. Could we call and convene the board meeting again, please? Where are we? What's the time this thing is supposed to have? Okay. That should be short.
Yeah.
What do you mean by resolution here? What do you want to discuss? What's going to happen? So it's not just Yokohama, it's the operating
Suite.
Oh, maybe can you split that up into two things?
Because you're taking a break with the future media.
Yeah, that's the media. Another question I would have is, anyway, we want to do this. No, we have to do this now. Otherwise, we're never going to get an agreement on the subject. Yeah, get a little voting out there, right? What we have to decide, we do first. And, okay. Yep. I should come in at the floor, actually number one, independent review is most important. Now what I would like to do here is, if it's time permitting, enough to your recommendation, is for each of the chairmen, like Linda, to issue, we're going to do a brief background, or we're just going to go straight into it? You don't need no background necessarily.
No,
I'm just going to go straight into it. Okay, fine. Okay, so, yeah, we're going to do that. Yeah. Let me bring in the rest. We'll start in about 2 minutes. So let us begin. June, please. Okay, so what I'd like to do is just take a snapshot of where we are on the agenda. As far as time is concerned, we have an hour scheduled. So the overall background is we have a number of issues which are relatively straightforward to vote, and we'll do those first. The agenda is before you, and what I'd like to do is pass over to Andrew to provide an overall brief of how we're going to do this.
Okay, the next item on the board's agenda is the resolution to approve the independent review policy. Ben, can you switch to my laptop? Amadeo, I apologize. I was trying to get copies of these things printed beforehand, but I ran out of time. Just read it. Bad idea. So just to recap for the board, the board approved principles for independent review in August in Santiago, had a delay past November because of the complications of the network solutions agreement, and now before us is a resolution to adopt the staff's implementing policy based on those principles. It was posted, there was minimal public comment on the website, mostly just notes from a couple of people urging the board to get going with it, and there was no comment yesterday. So the resolution reads as follows. Whereas after extensive public review and comment, the board adopted in Santiago the proposals for independent review submitted by the Advisory Committee on Independent Review. Whereas the NSI Registry and Registrar Agreements adopted in Los Angeles introduced additional responsibilities for the proposed independent review panel. Whereas the staff has proposed an independent review policy subject to public review and comment. Resolves that the board adopts the proposed independent review policy as amended. I'll explain that in just a second. And directs that it be attached to these minutes as attachment blank. And further resolved that the president and staff are directed to implement the independent review policy and to initiate the formation of a nominating committee. You'll note that there's an as amended. This is in response to Linda's note that the word it in one place was confusing and should be replaced with IRP. That edit has been done, and so what's being posted on the website with that edit will be what's is now what's before the board for its approval. In light of this, we had had a range of discussions about whether or not to include an at-large counsel in this. Since there is going to be no at-large counsel, no further thought along those lines needs to be done, and the policy is ready to be approved.
Before we do that, any comments from Linda or Hans?
No.
With that, may I have a motion? Second?
Second.
All in favor? Against? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next.
Okay. The next item on the agenda.
Should I ask someone to close the door at the back? It's rather noisy.
Next item on the agenda is CEO search.
Right. I believe we have a presentation from Vince who will go through this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My voice may not hold out for this whole thing. I hope it's brief. I have some slides which I hope can be brought up on the screen. Thank you. If I could have the next slide. We met yesterday and discussed the whole process by which we would search for a replacement for the current CEO, Mike Roberts. There are three members of the committee, myself as chairman, Hans Kleibrink, and Alejandro Pisanti, who unfortunately was not available. Is Jonathan also a member? I'm sorry. Is Jonathan, you're a member of the committee as well? Excuse me, I miswrote that. Jonathan should be noted as a member. And we had the advice and guidance of Joe, Andrew, and Christopher Nell as well.
We should also mention Esther. We should also mention Esther.
Oh, I'm sorry. Esther was on. Boy, I really must have screwed this up. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I wasn't making my slides very carefully. I will revise the slides for purposes of documentation. If I could have the next slide. We discussed in, lightly some of the characteristics that we hoped a CEO replacing Michael Roberts would have. And you can see there's a long list of things. The top, most important one was that whichever CEO was selected, we hope everyone would acclaim positively as a fine replacement. We also think that political skill and thick skin will help a lot in this job. And you can see management skills of all kinds are important and lots of energy. One thing we did have some concern about is that good candidates may not be local to the staff, which are at present in Los Angeles. And it was our general sense that it would be preferable to have the CEO located with the staff, if that's possible. We didn't think it was absolutely critical. It wasn't a showstopper, but it would be valuable, I think, for staff to have day-to-day contact with the CEO. And finally, in order to help the in the search, we had to suggest what a likely range of compensation might be. And there you see it could be anywhere from $250,000 to $350,000. I know that seems like an awfully large number to some people, but I can tell you that for organizations like this, it is not an unusual number. Certainly for the many nonprofits that I work with in the Washington area, it's quite common. If I can have the next slide. By the way, I want to make sure that it's clear to the board that that's not the only list of requirements or characteristics. There is a much more detailed list than that, which we will publish on the net. The plans and actions that we concluded yesterday are first to finalize the terms and conditions for the search, and there is a board resolution, which I'll ask the board to consider in a moment, to give instructions to the staff. Second, we propose that we would publish the job requirements and the profile of likely candidates and put those job requirements and profiles up on the website. And we would ask that email responses from interested parties go both to the search firm, which we propose to engage, and also to ICANN staff for archival purposes. We also would propose to prepare a press release about the search for a CEO. Andrew McLaughlin volunteered to draft such a release. It's our belief that making it very public that we are looking for a CEO and making it clear that we would invite interested parties to make their interest known as widely as possible would be beneficial to ICANN. And finally, yesterday I mentioned to the board during the budget discussion that in the event that a CEO is identified who in fact doesn't live in the LA area, we might be faced with some significant relocation costs, and those should be built into the budget. If I can have the next slide. This is a rough draft of a board resolution, which I believe is needed in order to make progress. And it goes as follows: whereas the ICANN board wishes to identify and recruit a permanent CEO, now therefore the CEO search committee recommends to the ICANN board that it authorize the ICANN CEO to negotiate a contract with a search firm not to exceed a cost of $125,000 plus expenses on an appropriate payment schedule. This is simply to enable the CEO staff to engage a search firm to conduct this search for us. Included in the and implicit in all of this, of course, is a schedule which would get us to an identified candidate by the end of this year. I can have the next. I think that's all there is for that one. So the proposal now on the table is this roughly worded resolution. I'd be pleased, Mr. Chairman, if anyone wishes to craft this more carefully or to discuss the matter that's open on the table.
May I take the roll first?
I assume it is implied, but I would like to see explicit wording that the hunting area for the search firm is the whole planet Earth and not the United States.
This is an international search, that is correct.
But I would like to see that in the...
Explicitly in the...
Explicitly in the...
Yes. That's fine. I don't know where we should put that. Probably whereas, yes.
The ICANN wishes to conduct a global search.
Intends to conduct a worldwide search.
Worldwide search.
Yes.
For qualified candidates now.
For a replacement CEO.
Yeah.
Will that satisfy your interest?
Permanent CEO. I have Ken and then Linda. Ken.
Yeah, thank you. I think we just need to do a little bit of wording on the final paragraph there.
Okay.
It may be another whereas we've received the report of the search committee. I think it's got to be worded that the board is passing a resolution to direct it to the search committee recommending to the board is past action, and now we're acting on that. Andrew or Louis could Do you understand the...
Yes.
I think they're working on...
They're doing the text not right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait a minute now. I'm not sure how... So this must have happened before I got involved. Because
you just did. You just made the report.
I'm sorry. You're saying that's what we just did. All right.
You just did it. Now we're going to act.
The committee has reported, and therefore the board is acting on that.
There'll be a brief pause while coffee is injected into the brain and insert.
Okay. We have Linda. Thank you. Linda's comment.
This is a minor thing, but I think the third bullet there belongs to be the second bullet.
Louder, please.
I'm sorry?
I couldn't hear you. Third bullet, second bullet.
The third bullet should precede what is now the second bullet. The other thing is, and it may be that you're going to come to this, but I believe the board as a whole should know what the Executive Search Committee believes is the core requirements for this job, as opposed to desirable characteristics that sit on top of any core requirements, because my understanding is that, from prior discussions, is that the board really intends to delegate a fair amount of responsibility to the executive search firm to come back to us with some recommendations. It's very important that we don't diverge in our understanding of what it is you're going to go with.
What the job requirements are. I don't have that right in hand to put it right up on the board, but we do have such a detailed description, so I'd be happy to undertake to make sure that the board has a copy of that set of job requirements, and if there are any concerns, you could express them. We can do that on the email.
Well, then that would mean that we, if you want board authorization of that, then it would mean we wouldn't be able to give it to you today. Can you summarize the core? I'm not looking for every detailed requirement, but what's the core requirement that you're looking for? I'm bringing a particular perspective to this that I don't want to confuse you. There are some things that if the people don't have, the candidates don't have this, they just don't make it into the pool. But they may have other wonderful characteristics, but if they haven't got this set, we wouldn't consider them qualified candidates.
I think the point is,
I'm only a little bit puzzled because it's my understanding that prior to the time that I was asked to chair this committee, that the board has had interaction on this.
We have, but we didn't act on it. That's I'm looking for a formal action by the board about those things because of the extent to which we would be delegating to you to come back to us.
Does it make sense for the search committee to circulate a document to the board that would give definition to what you just said? In other words, the minimum qualifications, desirable qualifications, and so forth. I mean, Vince has such a document.
I think I actually have the document that Linda's interested in. I'm just pulling it up now. Yes. Okay. Now, the only question is how to plug it in so that it shows up in visible form.
Well, if you read
it,
Ben Edelman can put it on here.
Okay, so
let's do it this way, Dingar. Why don't I just summarize what the requirements are?
It'll come to video.
And then we'll forward copies to everybody.
Would that address your concerns, or should we take it offline? I mean,
what I'm suggesting, and I hope I'm not too far out of order, is that we should not be authorizing the search firm
to set those core criteria
until we have the board authorized core requirements. Agreed.
Yes.
It was my understanding that the board had in fact seen these, but I can
But there, as Linda mentioned, we haven't taken action on that. Yeah.
Okay. We come back to
suggestion that I think we probably need to defer this item, unless we want to do this now in terms of circulating the core requirements. Mike?
In support of Linda's position, I'd just like to point out there have been three or four successive versions of the document that she's referring to, and the board has not seen anything since Berlin. So it is appropriate at this time for all members of the board to have an opportunity to review what it is that they're instructing the search committee to find.
That's fair enough.
I can summarize what that is.
In the interest of time, I think what we could do is circulate that and schedule it for the first or the next conference call. Would that be acceptable?
Well, I would like to make some progress on this matter. I'm concerned that if I delay, getting authorization for us to engage the search firm, that we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm. Hans?
Thank you, Pena. May I try to help that what the resolution asks is that the present CEO can negotiate a contract. We have understood that part of the initial phase will be a condensed rephrasing of the core requirements, and these will be feedback to the Executive Search Committee, and I would propose that we feed it back to the whole board and then have a conference call on these. But I still would like to ask the board to support the resolution to give the CEO the possibility to negotiate a contract.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Here, I take me less than 5 minutes to read these. These are the must-have requirements for any candidate. He has to have experience working with a large, diverse board of directors, developing a personal rapport with the board and helping it to work effectively. The candidate has to have extensive international experience, has to have an understanding of the issues behind ICANN's charter and mission, has to have strength as an advocate of new ideas, has to have an understanding of the political dynamics of achieving consensus on major ICANN issues and priorities, has to have credibility to the internet community, has to have evident leadership skills and ability to generate enthusiasm. With persistence, persuasion, intelligence, and evident personal integrity to develop and maintain consensus and the support of major stakeholders. The candidate should have a sharp sense of priority and ability to discriminate signal from noise and to get solutions quickly. That's an engineering specification. This candidate must have an open personal style, resilience as a listener, and be patient without letting priorities slip. This successful candidate will be self-starting, but able to make good use of the experience and effort of others. The candidate must have strong administrative discipline backed by a history of delivering commitments. This candidate should not be an empire builder. And the candidate should be a happy and frequent traveler. Finally, the candidate should have excellent references. Now, we recognize that there's some walking on water hiding and all of that. But in fact, we think those are requirements. There are some additional nice-to-have characteristics. For example, some senior general management experience would be good. It would be good if the candidate had lived and worked outside of his or her home country and had an international reputation and style. It would be very good if the candidate had enthusiasm for the internet and its potential. It would also be helpful if the candidate contributed to the development of the internet world, has had some role in internet's evolution. It would be also nice if the candidate had influence at senior levels and a strong network, personal network, experience of government and quasi-government bodies. It would be nice if the candidate had a name, so to speak, which is trusted and is respected by most of the constituency of ICANN. It would be good if the candidate had a record of building purposeful consensus. And finally, one would hope that the candidate is comfortable with herself or himself controlling his or her own ego while projecting a bias towards action and accomplishment. So those are the two desirable to have characteristics. So that's what we would be sending the search firm off to find. If we find two or three such candidates, I will be ecstatic.
If you find them, I want to marry them.
Yes.
I think Linda, and then Ken.
I think it will be wonderful if we can find someone who achieves all that, or has achieved all that. I think it will be very important to sort on the must-haves, that set which is absolutely essential, rather than we'd like to, because there is a walk-on-water characteristic to that list. And in the end, you're going to be forced to make some distinctions amongst people, and you mustn't be captured by some of the least lesser desirable characteristics and give up on any of the...
In my experience, in fact, you can't be too hard-nosed about the sorting of that list. What happens is that each candidate has strengths and weaknesses, and you have to balance against the list which are the ones that, in the aggregate, that candidate brings. So I don't disagree with trying to say what's the most important thing to us, but I will say in my own experience that you end up looking at candidates and trying to weigh them in total. And to put them up against a specific ordered list is often counterproductive.
Okay, Ken? Okay, I think we're ready to move on this, but I have to go back to my point. I think we got half of it done, but the fourth bullet needs to be worded as a board resolution. That now, perhaps now, therefore, the ICANN board authorizes the ICANN, or we resolve, or whatever you want, resolve that the ICANN board authorizes.
Yes, that's right.
Take that to the executive search committee recommendation we've had. This is now an ICANN board resolution.
Thank you.
We can, yes, that's right. That goes away.
I think the print should note.
ICANN CEO, right.
There you go. That's good.
Okay. Thank you, Shen.
You may even delete the ICANN board. The board resolved to authorize the ICANN to negotiate.
Yes, that's fine.
That's a perfectly sensible way to do it, Hans. Our usual practice is to do it in this clumsier way. I can change the language, but we usually do whereas, it is, and then we do resolve the board, and then there's a verb.
Do it in the style that we're accustomed to. So
move.
Before we do so, I think we should note how fortunate we are to have Mike as our CEO, and we should not overlook that, but please. Any motion to move this? Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Abstentions? You know, that's when we get passed. Next item. Amadeo?
May I have a comment? Yeah. I would like to add a general comment on staff. Is the third time I made the same comment. It's the first time in public, but I hope it's the last time. There's something that's absolutely frustrating when I can post a job vacancy. Is that if you read that, you have all the impression that all foreigners should immediately abstain. Because ICANN even does not ask that the candidate should speak English, which indeed, in the mind of those drafting the job vacancy announcement, it's evident because they are thinking about apparently only US residents and citizens. And I am absolutely frustrated that this is not the case. I mean, a computer network specialist can be someone that, for instance, use my level of English. A general counsel or a CEO should speak much better English than I do, and this should be specified somehow. I would also appreciate that, you know, the knowledge of other language is, for instance, for the registrar liaison, for anyone having, or the membership at large, assistant is at least appreciated, not a requirement, but at least appreciated. And finally, a short comment. We have all these kind of requirements. Bachelor's degree, for your information, a bachelor's degree is what Geraldine Jean-François or myself got at the age of 17, if not 16. Probably you're meaning bachelor's degree or equivalent in different educational regimes. Same for four-year college. College is where I was when I was 12. Right? So please try to draft that in a way that at least don't make all foreigners feel that we are excluded from such job packages. And this is especially important for the CEO itself. So please, at least ask that they speak English.
We would be delighted to receive edits from you on a day. If you want to sit and edit the text in a way that accomplishes that, send it along.
And actually, the document size will be revised to include the correction.
The chair of the executive search committee accepts the recommendations of Mr. Abram.
Thank you. So, in the interest of time, may we consider the agenda and the next item, which is audit committee charter.
Ben,
Can we have the charter as well?
Let me pull up the charter first, just by way of background. Linda, maybe you can just best explain what's before the board.
At the meeting in Los Angeles, a resolution established that there would be an audit committee and gave it a summary charge. Since that time, the committee has worked to review the literature, to draw on the experience of the board, those board members in their own understanding of how to deal with the checks and balances that an audit committee represents for a board, and look to make sure with the help of staff that our thinking was consistent with international context and with the nonprofit context in terms of the generally accepted principles for such a committee. And we developed a charter that is purposefully short, a little bit more explicit about our scope, very explicit about the membership and the way in which the members are selected and the officers within the committee are selected, and states what it is the scope of the committee will do. I would like to make, before we get to the text of that charter, I would like to explain to members of the board who may not be aware of this that ICANN staff has outsourced the formal accounting function for the board. There's a set of independent accountants for ICANN, I should say, that is putting together the basic chart of accounts and so forth for so that the financial statements are not something that our own staff has to construct. We're getting that kind of expertise in it. This audit will involve external auditors who will then review how that has functioned over the course of a year. It will examine such things as internal controls. The external auditors will, to make sure that we have in place the things that will make us have high financial integrity and be able to present fair and consistent financial statements and other financial reporting. The committee's charter extends beyond just the narrow financial affairs of the organization because the role of an audit committee in an organization like this is also to be aware of the risks of the organization and to continually consider those. And as we are being invented as an organization, we wanted to give the board a place for other kinds of evaluations to occur as we proceed. And so you find this open-ended language that says, and any other matter that may warrant its attention. We don't intend to take on lots of work here, but we wanted a place within the audit, within the board to place such needs, and we wanted the audit committee members to be, in fulfilling their responsibilities, to be very attentive to the organization and the potential risks for it, especially, but not exclusively, the financial risks. So the charter that you see before you has been created, posted fairly recently. I don't know exactly when it was posted. It follows the model of many audit committees' charters, and we would ask the board's careful review of the language here, and then if it seems satisfactory to you to have the board to adopt this charter for the committee's work. The reason we are asking that the board adopt it is that we want the full responsibility of the board behind this check and balance system, the sense of fiduciary responsibility for everyone delegated to the committee. And that also is a good assurance that the audit committee won't go berserk.
Thank you. Comments?
I should mention while you're thinking that the members of the committee were Greg Crew and Phil Davidson and myself with the good staff work, as usual, of Mike Roberts and Louis Chouton.
Thank you. Mike?
Could I just make a brief comment? Because in some sense, this is creating an oversight of the CEO kind of function, and I think it's entirely appropriate that that be done. Linda and I have worked very closely together with this. I've discussed it with our own operating accountants, to use that term, and I think we're ready to proceed with this in an orderly way.
Right. On the screens in front of you is the proposed resolution, which I'll read for the record. Whereas the audit committee has presented to the board a proposed charter for its activities, whereas the board views the proposed charter as a sound basis for the audit committee in performing its functions, resolved that the board adopts the proposed audit committee charter and directs that it be attached to these minutes as attachment blank.
May I have, unless there's any questions or comments, someone to move the motion, please? Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Mm-hmm. Abstentions? Passed unanimously.
Thank you.
May we have the agenda again, please? Okay, we have about half an hour on the official time schedule. We are now going to discuss the IETF ICANN agreements or the IANA function.
Yes,
this is relatively straightforward.
Yes, this is very straightforward. Let me give just a brief preface and then I'll go to the resolution. One of the activities required of ICANN in getting through the transition process is to form relationships with other entities involved in internet operation, and one of those, the IETF, which traditionally has appointed the IANA, since the IETF write standards that refer to the IANA. Beginning February of 1999, the staff and council have been in discussion with the IETF and the IAB concerning formalization of that through a memorandum of understanding. That was held up a bit because of requirements that we complete our agreement with the U.S. government regarding the IANA function. Since that's been completed, we were able relatively quickly to conclude on, frankly, language that had been discussed long ago. On the website, if it could be posted, this agreement was signed by Mike Roberts, subject to ratification of the board. The IETF is anxious to get that ratification quickly, because, in fact, they would like to go forward with publishing it as an internet draft. Resolution that's being offered states as follows. Whereas, after many months of discussions with the Internet Engineering Task Force and the Internet Architecture Board, the corporation's president reached agreement with those organizations on a memorandum of understanding effective March 1st, 2000, concerning the technical functions of the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. Whereas the president has signed the memorandum of understanding as set forth in attachment blank, subject to ratification of the board. Resolved, the memorandum of understanding attached as attachment blank is hereby ratified.
Any chance of getting that on the screens?
The agreement?
The resolution that was not shown. So if we could just take a moment to get that on the screens and consider the text as read.
Oh, well, there were. There we go.
There you go.
And,
so it's relatively short.
As read, it varies from the screen in only typographical ways. To change the one place.
Okay. So barring minor typos and changes of minor grammar, could I ask for any comments or suggestions? If not, may I have a motion for this? Seconded? All in favor?
Aye.
Against? Abstentions? Passed unanimously. Again, another relatively straightforward item is authorization of checks. Louis, you
yes.
Want to take this?
Yes, I am planning to do it. Give me some moments for my computer. Okay. Yes, there is a resolution.
And can we have the resolution on the screen?
The president
sign some checks to pay off the corporation's law firm for some outstanding invoices that were that require ratification of the board. The resolution says, whereas on December 13, 1999, the president has signed on behalf of the corporation check numbers 1312 and 1313 in the amounts of $97,860.44 and $455,674.69 to the United States Reps and Poe in connection with legal services provided to the corporation. Resolved that the president's actions in making those payments are ratified and approved.
Mike, any comments?
One of these checks is a rather large check. I'd just like to note for the board that this reflected a half a year of legal service from Jones Day, covering perhaps the most difficult legal period of the corporation's existence, including extensive congressional hearings on two different occasions, as well as enormously long and difficult negotiations over a period of several months with Network Solutions in the United States government.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, may I have a motion? Seconded. Let's vote. All in favor? Against? Abstentions? Passed unanimously. Sorry, Mike. Obviously, we have how many abstentions?
No, it wasn't an
abstention. Was that an abstention? Jonathan, it was an abstention, so we had two abstentions. And one question. So it wasn't passed unanimously.
This is a question regarding this particular motion. Is there a normal procedure for authorizing checks in excess of a certain amount, and does that normally take place before or after the checks are written?
The discussion on this matter with the board was clear, and the fact that we are somewhat late in ratifying it reflects the fact that our cash flow was significantly influenced by the agreements in Los Angeles and the payment that followed thereafter that enabled us to, we were very significantly in arrears on these invoices, and the payments from Network Solutions following, I think about 10 days following the LA meetings, enabled us to bring the accounts current prior to the year end of 1999, which of course is desirable because otherwise there's some hardship on Jones, additional hardship on Jones Day with receivables going over their fiscal year end. And we had passed the time of the December board meeting. However, the size of the checks and the purpose for which they were drawn were known to the board.
Jonathan?
I'd just like to briefly explain my abstention.
Just to clarify, there were two abstentions, yourself and Mike.
And also respond to Nick. I want to make it clear that I have absolutely no question in my mind that the services provided were excellent, that the price was fair, probably lower than it should have been. I abstained only because, as a lawyer, my good sense tells me that I would like to have, I should have seen the account and reviewed it, and I think that Vince's point is well taken, that is, there should be established some rule there whereby expenses which exceed a certain amount are somehow seen and reviewed in more detail before approval. As I say, that has nothing to do with any suggestion that there's anything improper or unfair or unreasonable about this current bill or even its approval at this time.
Well noted.
Perhaps I would just say a moment about that since there is a question of appropriate procedure here, and I think that the comment's entirely in order. Prospectively, in fact, with reference to this particular situation, a number of the invoices in question that were overdue were within my normal signature authority and within the terms of the engagement letter which the corporation has executed with Jones Day. So if they had been paid on time, they would have been entirely in order. And the fact that this is such a large amount of money was due to our arrears. Now, we now are doing our best to adhere to a practice of being commercially up to date on our bills, and we are at this time in that condition and will certainly endeavor to stay that way. But I just, for the benefit of the directors who came on last year at the end, the SO directors. We certainly had a very difficult time over many months, and we owed a lot of money to a lot of people. And I don't say that in any way of making excuses for a procedure that was out of the ordinary, but just to point out that we have now achieved the opportunity to do things in the manner you and we wish to aspire to.
So what you're saying, we're going forward, this won't happen again. Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, agenda, please. Okay, we have a very interesting and always topical issue, which is meeting schedules. We have two items to discuss, one of which is specific to the Yokohama meeting in July, and then the schedule for next year. So taking the first ones first, Yokohama. Andrew?
The next ICANN meetings after Cairo are going to be held in Yokohama, Japan. The board set a date, I think as early as two meetings ago, finalized the date back in November. The date is the Saturday and Sunday preceding the INET conference. And what I'd like to do is to kind of alert the board and maybe give June an opportunity to inform us as well. But I want to alert the board as to the scheduling peculiarities that are entailed in having this particular set of meetings, and also we need to notify our constituent organizations of their options when they want to meet. So the public forum is going to be, let's see, June, is it the 16th?
Yes,
so Saturday, July 16th, and the 15th. Saturday, July 15th. And the ICANN board meeting is going to be Sunday, July 16th.
That's it.
This is for a variety of reasons, and those dates are set in stone. Normally, our meeting sequence has been to have supporting organization meetings, advisory committee meetings, working groups, and so forth, meet in the days preceding the ICANN board meeting and public forum. This time around, the INET conference really starts in earnest on something like Wednesday. There are some workshops Monday and Tuesday, and some of our directors will be taking part in ISOC Board of Trustee meetings on Monday. And so we're looking at a change from the normal sequence where the public forum happens first and then the board meeting, and then maybe the BNSO and the Names Council and the General Assembly will meet afterwards. It is, of course, possible, and I should also say that all kinds of rooms are available for free for the supporting organizations on Monday and Tuesday. For meetings to be held on the previous Thursday and Friday, however, the rooms in the conference center are not available, and instead, oh, sorry, James.
The room, not all, but we're gonna have we're gonna use a kind of conference hall, and then there are plenty of rooms in there. So what we are doing at this point is reserving the rooms on the 14th Friday, 15th, 16th for the regular things, and the 17th and the 18th, Monday and Tuesday, are some rooms are available.
I see, and so there are rooms available on Friday.
Yeah, Friday. Well, that's a change from what we have.
Yeah, this is an improvement in the situation, so that's
right,
good to know.
Right.
So that makes a lot of this less serious. Now, I'm sorry, Vin?
Just one question. I gather that an attempt to have these meetings, the ICANN meetings, occur at the end of the INET didn't work because of other calendar problems.
Correct. It didn't work because there were some scheduling issues. We thought this through a number of different ways, and it probably would have been best to do that because then people would stick around for them and you could have some degree of overlap during the week, but in any event, that was not an option for some directors. What we're going to need to do then is to encourage the DNSO and whoever else wants to meet on Friday and to hold follow-on meetings on Monday or Tuesday if necessary. What we want to do is make it possible for people to come to these meetings and go to INET if they choose without having to lose too much time, travel to multiple different destinations and so forth. I think that is the note. I mean, Mike, do you want to make any comments about the scheduling? I should say to the directors that if
you're going to be there on Friday, and if we do our usual rounds of board briefings and things like that to prepare for the meetings on Saturday and Sunday, it means you really need to be arriving in Tokyo on Thursday, which for example, many Americans means you need to leave Wednesday. So this is something to keep in mind as you're making your preparations. I'll be sending a memo around to the board about your specific travel considerations that you ought to be taking into account, but I thought I would alert everyone to that now. June, do you have anything that you want to add?
Yeah, we learned all the network and the other normal board working stuff for late Thursday. So if you get in on Thursday, then you probably can start working.
I think it should be noted that, I mean, this is the board schedule for this event, and there has been some concern among some of the SAs with respect to the other meetings and the payment of rooms for other specific SAs and the subsidization thereof. And I think that if those SAs wish to schedule a meeting at the same time as us, who do they go in contact?
Well, this is a good question. I mean, I have been probably doing a poor job, but nevertheless, in my own mind, doing a fairly aggressive job of trying to convince the SOs, and particularly the DNSO, to take charge of its own meeting schedule, to decide when it's going to meet, how large the rooms are going to be, and so forth. And I've tried to facilitate that, but June and I have talked about coming up with a way to cut me out of that loop and to let the SOs deal directly with their needs for room space and so forth. The issue here, however, is that the ICANN staff has played a mediating role in the past between the local organizers and the DNSO, because the DNSO has what some might view as a tendency to be willing to undertake commitments without having the funds to meet them. And so I've had to moderate in the past to say, well, you can't have a full webcast teleconference bridge because we don't have the money for it and so forth. So I want to protect the local host committee from getting requests that they can't, you know, that there's no money to pay for. But in any event, what June is telling me is that the space is available, so that's easy.
Yeah, but the space is not, you know, it's not unlimited, right? So what is the policy? The policy should be defined, right? Is that what Binder's point, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think Rob, if you have anything.
Not very specific for the coming meeting in Yokohama, but I would like at some future board meeting to question the whole matter of ICANN support, at least in kind, for DNSO meetings, whereas the other SOs have decided that they understand their supporting role for ICANN just the other way around, and they organize their own meetings and they fund their own meetings, and I think the DNSO should very seriously have a look at that too, because in a sense it's not fair.
At the moment, the policy that we've been using essentially on an informal basis is we do the best we can to provide free meeting space. And we don't pay for the other things like, you know, well, and I should say we do pay for a few other things. We occasionally have paid for video projectors where possible. And I don't, this is sort of a thorny issue because we've got to, you know, the DNSO is trying to figure out its own finances. But for example, I mean, the DNSO has a payable to the Berkman Center for almost $3,000. I think the Berkman Center is preparing to cut off their webcasting of DNSO meetings unless they actually get it paid. And it's been cut off then, and so you know, this dynamic of doing stuff without having the money in hand to pay for it can't continue. At the same time, I want to be as cooperative as I can and just facilitate meetings because, after all, they're an important part of the process and they do a lot of really hard work and important work. And so to the extent that I can cheaply and easily give them meeting spaces and prevent major expenditures from happening, we've usually been willing to absorb incidental costs on the margins because it just facilitates the whole process. So my suggestion is that for Yokohama, we take the basic structure that we provide a space to the extent that we can within reasonable limits and pretty much leave it at that.
Rob?
Still, I would like, not for Yokohama, but at some time in the near future, maybe as part of the evaluation of the DNSO MOU, to pay some attention to this.
And possibly also the budget for the next year working forwards. Mike, since we're on this, I'd like to very briefly get the sense of the board. The existing policy which Andrew and Louis and I have been trying to work within is that in an orderly way, the SOs will support themselves for their out-of-pocket costs. We have informally a request from the DNSO to consider a substantial amount of cash funding for both the end of this year and into next year, and I gather from what I'm hearing that the board would not look with favor upon that, consistent with what Rob just said. Is there a discussion, guidance to us?
You're asking for a sense?
I am, yes.
Okay.
I would say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So continue as well.
So you're saying that your sense is that you affirm your previous guidance to us. Thank you.
I would actually be against that, in that I think the SOs should be treated equally, whatever basis. So if we do that with the existing policy, then fine, then they should be available to the other SOs. Alternatively, each SO should be self-supporting.
I'd just like to make one remark that's personal. I'm not speaking for the board, but I'm concerned that this board is being asked to do a number of things, hold annual meetings four times a year, do outreach, conduct studies, et cetera, et cetera. And it's operating on a basis where it can't afford to pay its bills, or it can't afford to do this or do that. I think it's time that the community recognized the legitimacy of this corporation and its ends, and that we found some solution to proper funding for this organization. To begin with, I think the debate was always that, you know, God forbid it should have too much money, or, you know, have money that it shouldn't have and fill all kinds of pockets that shouldn't be filled. That may have been fine to begin with, but I think at this point what you're listening to is many requests from all of you to do all kinds of things that we all recognize are necessary and reasonable, and we haven't got the money. I can tell you there isn't a director sitting at this table who isn't out of pocket. And that, well, obviously the smallest of the concerns, is nonetheless symptomatic of the problem. And I would welcome personally any suggestions from any of you and anybody else in the community as to how we might find the proper funding. I realize that the board will be doing it, but I'd still like to hear from other people. This is a personal remark.
Okay.
Thank you.
Andrew, and then I'd like to bring this discussion to a close.
Yeah, let me suggest that we just, at least at the moment, refocus back on the immediate need, which is June's and my need for policy on what we're going to do here. And I should say to Pindar that we've told the ASO and PSO that any time they want to hold a meeting, we'll treat them exactly the same as the DNSO, which is provide a meeting space. So if they choose to hold a meeting in connection with the ICANN meetings, we facilitate it. I mean, it's important for the DNSO to function well, and if that means, you know, providing meeting spaces, it seems like a good minimum. So my suggestion would be that to the extent that space permits, we provide meetings for the DNSO groups, which means 7 constituency rooms, and then to give them the ability to have a general assembly or names council meeting. And working groups, you know, a few other meetings besides. But that beyond that, we don't plan to provide any other significant technology outside of the webcasting, which we've had regular disputes over, but the marginal cost of an additional day of webcasting have turned out to be relatively low. And so I would suggest that we plan to provide that webcast, or at least plan to provide that webcast on the assumption that the DNSO will fulfill its promised commitment to fund it. Now, Mike is frowning, and I guess that we had considered, I guess, saying that no more webcasts, no money, no webcasts will be the new policy from this point forward.
Well, I think that the board's not trying to get into the fine grain of this. I think they're saying that they're not prepared to recognize a funded budget item for any SO under the current policy, including the DNSO. So I think, you know, if we're talking about a few dollars here and there to make for the good of the order, they're saying to the staff, work it out.
if you're saying come in, you know, if you're talking about putting before us $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 of a line item budget item, probably you're not gonna. That's not gonna work.
Yeah. So I mean, Mike, do you have a sense of the board and how? Okay, I think that's enough. With that, let's move on to the next item, which is the meeting schedule for 2001 and 2002. I think. Andrew, will you lead this discussion?
Let me, since Andrew was very busy pulling things together while we had a brief discussion about this morning, let me give sort of an introduction. For those directors who joined us in November, the board had previously decided at a time when we were really strapped that we thought that our agenda for 2000 could be accommodated with three meetings. And so we sort of eliminated the spring meeting by pulling in an early summer meeting and then sliding into the annual meeting in November on a three-quarter schedule. As this is proceeded, there seems to be a general feeling among the board that we ought to, that the agenda is going to continue to be busy and that we ought to go back to a rather firm and advanced schedule of four quarterly meetings every year. And the proposal on the table before us for further discussion is that in the year 2001, we would meet in the first or second week of the third month of each quarter. So this would be March, June, September, and November. And the November one is pulled in because of the annual holidays. We are further of a mind at the moment to invite hosting proposals under our existing policy about hosting meetings from South Asia in their summer of 2001, namely March, from Latin America in June of 2001, from Europe in September of 2001. And on the west coast of the United States, there's some discussion about whether we might not continue to neglect our Canadian brethren and hold the annual meeting north of the invisible border between the United States and Canada.
Thank you for that. Please use the mic. So with that, Mike, are you specifically suggesting dates? Do you have any firm dates? Is it the third?
Well, Andrew, I would speak to this, but generally what we try to do is go through the, give the host area an opportunity to come forward with something specific as soon as possible so that we then play that into our calendars.
Okay, so call for proposals is what you're saying?
What I would suggest that we do is ad hoc call for proposals for this meeting, and we received about five or six proposals. One thing that's useful to know is when are there conferences or other meetings which might be appropriate to hold in conjunction with an ICANN meeting, again, just to reduce the generic travel burden of the people who attend these meetings. I don't think we have a good sense of that, so the board should accept that there may be some flexibility here to find a really great conference match. But in any event, what I would suggest that we do is outline this schedule, post a detailed document of our basic meeting requirements for anybody who wants to submit a proposal for any meeting, and then ask for proposals and set a cutoff date of maybe, I'm not sure.
May 1.
Well, for the first set of meetings, maybe the very end, the last of these meetings that we've just sequenced, we probably don't need the proposals until...
I personally, at least, have had several directors tell me that their calendars are such that they really want to have days allocated at least 18 months in advance.
Understood. Okay.
Good.
Greg?
Just a question to Mike. You mentioned that the intention for the March meeting in 2001 was South Asia, I think you said. Maybe you should be a little more specific about what you mean by South Asia.
The CEO notes the comment from the director from Australia with regard to the site of the March 2001 meeting. Yes, there's been a good deal of discussion about visiting with our Aussie friends in March of 2001.
Okay. Yeah, just one stupid question, Mike. Why the rearrangement of the order we have followed so far for the regions has been changed for climatic reasons? Perhaps? Because we are doing Asia-Pacific, then America, then again Asia.
Yeah, I'd like to say, just to get it clear here, that I'm reporting a discussion. The staff did not make a proposal. The question of the rotation is entirely at the board's pleasure. We do not have a staff preference about the order of rotation.
So would that be the first order of business in this discussion, is to define the order of rotation? On the understanding that the meetings will be in the last month of the quarter and the second week.
Yes, and for a year.
And with the understanding that it will be four meetings per year, once per quarter. So in summary, the proposal is to have four meetings next year,
yep,
at the last month of each quarter, March, June, etc., etc. And what we will need to decide today, if possible, is the order of rotation for the four different regions, assuming that each meeting will be in a different region, correct?
Five.
Of the five regions, but there's four meetings. So in that regard, we won't be able to go to all regions in 1 year, by definition. So some ideas and discussion here on the order of rotation for the first meeting, second, third, and fourth. Do we have any proposals?
Vince? I would just suggest that whatever order we pick, that we take into account the weather at the time of year that we end up in, wherever region we are at the time. Warmer is better.
So what the directors should do is at least note that the second week in the last month of each quarter should be earmarked for ICANN. That should be done today.
With the exception of December.
With the exception of December. What is the exception in December?
Well, I think because of
the
accumulation of holidays, we're currently sitting at the second or third week of November. This year, Andrew, do we happen to have the dates right in front of us for this year? Because somebody asked me about that this morning and I'd forgotten.
The dates for
next this year in November.
For this year's meetings?
Yeah.
Yes, I can pull that in.
We try to stay the week ahead of the U.S. Thanksgiving because not only do a lot of things shut down, but it's the biggest single travel crunch in airlines in the United States. So it's really hard for people to get the connections they want.
So the board has, what's posted is that the board set aside September 27, 28, and has set aside November 13, 14, 15, 16. And the September dates are just listed as tentative. Apparently no decision has been made on location or whether the meeting will in fact happen. And November 13 through 16 is set for Los Angeles. For the Marina Del Rey Marriott, I believe.
That's correct.
I think we should better explain the September thing, right?
So, at least for next year, my understanding is that it will be in the second week of the last month of each quarter, other than in the last quarter, where it will be the second week of November. Okay, so if the directors can mark their schedules. As we have no firm proposals for rotating the different regions, I think we should take that offline to the mailing list, as we normally do. And with that, we are 22 minutes over time, and so we have one last, but fairly important item, actually.
That's exactly right,
which
Ben.
Is, Andrew?
Yeah, Ben, can you flash up the screen? I'd like to present the following draft resolution for the board's consideration. Whereas the local hosts of ICANN's Cairo meetings have organized an outstanding set of meetings and gala dinner under the leadership of Dr. Tarek Kamel,
whereas the board and staff have been pleased to take the advice of His Excellency the Minister of Communications and Information Technology and drink the waters of the Nile and look forward to our reportedly inevitable return, whereas the board is concerned that the local host committee may have set an impossibly high standard for future meetings, nevertheless, it is resolved that the board and staff express their sincere thanks to Dr. Tarek Kamel, his staff, the Egyptian Ministry of Communication, the Cabinet Information and Decision Support Center, the Internet Society of Egypt, and the 10 sponsors, Mobinil, Alcatel, MIST, Ericsson, Lucent Technologies, Raya Holding, Microsoft, MCI, WorldCom, Bulk Register, and the two co-sponsors, Network Solutions and Geganet, of these meetings, period.
So I think for formalities, thank you very much.
You have it. You should recognize Dr. Tarek.
Dr. Please, Dr. Please. Thank you. As just to wrap up this meeting, I would just like to ask if there's any other business. If there's no other business, I would like to adjourn the meeting and see you at the next meeting, which will be in Yokohama. Thank you very much for your time. Now, board members, there, at your discretion right now, please make yourself available for press, and lunch will begin in 12:30.
Right.
Which is the restaurant for lunch?
Oh, the restaurant is, it's today, gosh, that's a good question. Starts at 12:30, and it's either in the Alhambra or in the Aladdin, but maybe when it...
Follow the smell.
Yeah, wherever, so
please go back to where you were yesterday.
We're posted up
where you were not yesterday. Oh, okay. No, hold on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So,
you want to be able to hear that?
Oh, well, we've been here.
Excuse me, for the at-large membership task force, implementation task force, there will be an informal meeting during lunch. So for those who are selected or nominated, and if you have time, please come around me in the lunch place. The at-large membership task force. Thanks. This informal meeting for the, task force is in the lunch place in the 26th floor, the just corner of the overall lunch place. We may proceed in 5-10 minutes.
I'm here, so I actually sit down. I'm here.
So is it that you guys were looking at your opening yourself up to a slight bit, like a on a theoretical level, I think you guys should be in the market for an exception to something like that. The accountability is produced by the
I'll do that.
Yeah.